for extreme times. This is A View from Space with the Spaceman on Talk Radio AM 640.
I'm a spaceman. This is A View from Space. I'd like to welcome you in right now if you're driving around listening to AM 640. I welcome you in, or if you're listening at work right now via the AM 640 app, I welcome you in too. Or if you're listening to channel 865 and Shaw Direct, picking up the show there, I welcome you in there too. Or if you're listening to me right now on your 3 or 4G personal communication device via the Stream the World software, which so many do, I welcome you in. Or if you're what some call the best seat in the house, check out A View from Space, logged on to 640toronto.com. Picking up the live audio streaming at the website there, I welcome you in. Wherever you are in the world, I welcome you in. Our overlords, the real rulers of our world, are guided by three things. They are astrology, numerology, and sacred geometry, and are consistently being used, those three things, to convey messages to you and I, the masses, while all the while slowly brainwashing you, indoctrinating you into this new religion of theirs, which is really an old, old religion. And all three, astrology, numerology, and sacred geometry, have been in heavy play in the last fortnight or so in the Illuminati-controlled mass media. Let me start with this BBC headline just yesterday. Oh, the BBC is a hidden 13, by the way. Check it out sometime. Work the numerology out. The headline read, Babylonians were the first to use geometry. That was the headline. Breaking news. A news network stating Babylonians were the first to use geometry. They continued to say five Babylonian tablets. Keep that number of five in mind. More on that coming up. These five tablets revealed that these ancient people were being so intelligent, so plugged in, so enlightened. They were using sophisticated geometry. This was all according to ancient cuneiform tablets taken from an archaeological dig in ancient Sumer, now Iraq. This was supposedly back in the late 4th millennium before Christ. We're told that cuneiform writing was one of the earliest systems of writing and was distinguished by its wedge-shaped marks on clay tablets made by a blunt reed for a stylus or a pen, if you like. We're also informed by the Beeb, by the way, that cuneiform writing was gradually replaced by the Phoenician alphabet by the 2nd century. Anyway, the BBC, which is supposed to be a news-gathering organization, is used consistently, as well as other media assets owned by the elites, to brainwash you, even trick you into adopting this religion. This is the one that will replace Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. Oh, they have a major plan for this indoctrination, passing it off as news and scientific fact. But in order to indoctrinate you into believing they have supposedly very learned experts to convey these messages to you, to present these myths as fact, as truth, as in this latest Babylonian piece presented by the Beeb, They bring on their talking head expert who impresses you with his credentials and position in the world. In this case, it's Professor Matthew Ossentreiber from the Humboldt University in Berlin, Germany. Although the Germans are very high tech, you know, das Auto, right? Nothing like German technology. Yeah, it's Professor Matthew Ossentreiber from the Humboldt University in Berlin. This purported new study is published by the magazine Science. Yeah, they call it Science. Get it? Get the message? It's not ancient mythology now, or some guy surmising what they think may have happened way back when, with no proof. Essentially making up, though, wanting desperately to believe what ancient civilization was like. But exactly what happened 6,000 years ago, and even farther back, is unknown. But now, it's science. The professor goes on to say, I wasn't expecting this. It's completely fundamental to physics and all branches of science. We use this method. The ancient Babylonians once lived in what's now Iraq, Syria, that area. The civilization emerged about 1800 BC. Clay tablets engraved with their cuneiform writing system have already shown that these people were way advanced in astronomy, we're told. They wrote reports about what they saw in the sky. Professor Ossentreiber told the BBC World Service's Science in Action program this in the last couple of days. And they did this, he says, over a long period of time, over centuries. But this latest research, breaking new research shows, they were also way ahead when it came to maths. It had been thought that complex geometry was first used by scholars in Oxford and Paris in medieval times. They used curves to trace the position and velocity of moving objects. But now, scientists believe the Babylonians developed this technique around 350 BC. A hidden eight, the sun worshippers number there, by the way. Professor Ossentreiber examined the five Babylonian tablets that were excavated in the 19th century and which are now held in the British Museum's archives. Here comes the sacred geometry. The script reveals that they were using four-sided shapes called trapezoids to calculate when Jupiter would appear in the night sky and also the speed and distance that it traveled. Why so much interest in Jupiter? Let me continue. This figure, a rectangle with a slanted top, describes how the velocity of a planet, which is Jupiter, changes with time, he said. We have figures that one axis, the horizontal side, represents time, and the other axis, the vertical side, represents velocity. Sorry about that. There's kind of the character there a little bit. Because they're acting. The area of the trapezoid, you see, he said, gives you the distance traveled by Jupiter along its orbit. What is so special about this type of graph is unknown from antiquity, he says. So making figures of motion in this rather abstract space of velocity against time, well, this is something very, very new. Right, Prof. He added that there was evidence that the Greeks used a more straightforward form of geometry, which dealt with the spatial relationships between the Earth and the planets, rather than the concepts of time and velocity. Professor Ossentreiber told the BBC Science in Action program that he wasn't too sure how common this technique was. He said it could be that there was an earlier tablet written by, wait for it, a genius. That's what he said. It could be that there was an earlier tablet written by a genius, by one individual who came up with this new way of doing geometry. It could also be that, in fact, this is a method that was more widely applied in by different scholars, by different researchers. We don't really know, he said. But they want to believe it so badly. It's one genius. And believe me, I can already tell you later on, in our very near future, as this science continues to be discovered, I can already tell you who they want you to believe, who this so-called genius was. Nimrod! Yes, Nimrod, the first and so far only man in all of human history to rule the entire world as they knew it then. This has all to do, of course, with heralding the next man to come from the bloodline of Nimrod, who is also Cain, by the way. Different names, same thing. To attempt to rule all the world just as Nimrod did before him. That's why the king planet, Jupiter, was centered out here. Get the message? A king starts it all and is coming and will reveal all truth. The Masonic Christ is on his way even now. Yes, things are being readied for his appearance on the world stage. That's what all this chaos is. He's going to bring the new way, the new answers, the new world order. Oh, yeah, here's yet another news story that broke out just a couple of days ago, January 28th. The headline reads, Math Whizzes of Ancient Babylon Figured Out Forerunner of Calculus. Yeah, this is an unrelated news item that has also appeared in a magazine. You know what the magazine was called? Science. This was just a couple of days ago. More on this. Just a slight bit. As I continue on Talk Radio AM 640, it's the Spaceman. And this is View from Space. And I'm just getting started. I'm a guy to call Space. I communicate by email only. Got two addresses. Take a look. Space at 640toronto.com or Spaceman at 640toronto.com. H.W. writes in, well, this month seems to be the triple X month. First, we had SpaceX, the rocket, remember the rocket landing? SpaceX rocket landing on a ship in the ocean, which fell over when it landed. Second, we had an announcement that they have found Planet X. Third, we have the return of the X-Files television show. The whole series. X is the 24th letter of the alphabet. 2 plus 4 equals 6. Space X, 1X. Planet X, the second X. X-Files television series named to return this week, the third X. So, X, X, X. Each carrying a numerological value of 6 is a hidden 6, 6, 6. Just thought I'd share this with you. H.W. So as I was saying before the break, the other news story that broke a couple of days ago, January 28th, headline read, Math Whizzes of Ancient Babylon Figured Out Forerunner of Calculus. Yeah, everything seems to be going back to the ancient Babylonians now. They did it all. What about the Persians? Nah, forget about it. Babylon. This is the unrelated news item that also appeared in the magazine called Science a couple days ago. It was all about what's known as sophisticated geometry. Hello, we've got a new type of geometry now. It's sophisticated geometry. Yeah, not just geometry, but sophisticated geometry. The branch of mathematics that deals with shapes, we're now informed, with the latest breaking news that it was being used at least 1,400 years earlier than previously thought. How often have they used that? They'll do it with your debt, too. Oh, we're in deeper debt than we previously thought. And when you hear those words, be very, very discerning. Here's another word. A study suggests, yeah, when they say that, look out, key word here is suggests. Not really science here. It's kind of just sort of like guessing. You know what electional science is? Electional science is not a scientific plan to go through expeditiously many categories of testing in all kinds and different environments. And if you come out with the same answer, well, it is then a proven scientific fact. What these people do is they do this. They suggest that this might happen. They want it to happen so badly that they call it electional science and say, well, that's about this Nibiru planet, Planet X. Well, we think we found it. This is electional science. They want you to believe what they're suggesting. And that's all it is. It's a suggestion. So, when a study suggests, beware. It's not scientifically proven fact. It just suggests. Sort of like the method of I would put it like this. A hypnotist uses suggestion. And they're hypnotizing you, brainwashing you into their black magic spell. It's not science. In fact, very little of that postulated as science today is at all science. We're being duped, fooled into thinking it's a scientifically proven fact. When it's an electional science, we want to believe it so badly, we're going to say, this is probably what happened. The story goes on to state that the ancient Babylonians were using geometrical calculations to track Jupiter again across the night sky. These are two different stories, but both centering out the planet Jupiter. Previously, you see, the origins of this technique had been traced way back to the 14th century. But, all this new information now being presented lately always takes you back even further and further back in time. And you get the feeling that we're going so far back now, they're getting closer to the truth. And the other phrase the Illuminati like to use, just like I pointed out with the word suggest, is earlier than previously thought. As if we were steadily uncovering the real truth to our past, the farther back we go. No, the farther back you go, the more murky it gets. The more lies you can perpetrate. The more suggestions that you can make. And then pretty soon you're into mythology saying that's scientific fact. And we're damn near there. Yes, the mover and shaker of our world, the Illuminati, are methodically revealing their coveted religion to you and I. And we'll soon, one day, have one leader to come along that will demand it be adopted by all. Or you die. This concept is something that this group, all the way through time, all the empires that have come and gone, ruled in this world, have been consistently, repeatedly done over and over and over again. And that is to tear down the old religion, saying, oh, it's no good anymore, replace it with the new one, which, again, is the old one. There's nothing new under the sun. It's simply history. repeating itself. You know, take Ozzy Osbourne of Black Sabbath, who's on their tour, and this is their final tour, you know what they're calling it? The End. Yeah. Starting at Omaha, Nebraska, Ozzy Osbourne's Black Sabbath tour. You know what Omaha, Nebraska is known as? The gateway to the West. Do you know what the West is in the occult? Death. The sun births in the East, rises, and dies in the West. That's why Ozzy chose Omaha. So don't think like they love him the most or he thinks that's a real cool place. That's why. His song, Dreamer. Ozzy Osbourne, Dreamer. Check it out sometime. The lyrics. You do it right now if you're listening on your smartphone. And you'll see he's singing exactly what I just said. Here's something else I repeat over and over because I have to. Because that is the MO, the modus operandi of our overlords. This one is, as above, so below. Or another version is, as it is above, so it is below. It's taken from Hermetic philosophy. Hermes. Nimrod's buddy. Right-hand man. Spreading it to Egypt through the pharaohs. This Hermetic philosophy means simply that what happens to man here on earth, and I mean everything that happens to man and woman here on this planet, is written in the stars. God, it's even written in the King James Version of the Bible to herald their Savior, Jesus Christ, as the Magi, the three Persian astrologer experts, predicted his birth in a certain little town as they followed the bright star in the sky above leading the way, pointing the way, as the Bible states. Another celestial event that's been heralded by the Illuminati-controlled mass media to be a major celestial event, and it carries a very clear message, and of course, it is centered around the only planet that I have mentioned so far, with the two news stories of the brainwashing from the Beeb, Jupiter. The message is one of cataclysmic upheaval of immense proportions in the world. Remember, as it is above, so it is below, because that's what the stars are saying. The Illuminati want you to get that message. This celestial event means a cataclysmic upheaval of immense proportions in the world is on the way. I'm, of course, referring to the alignment of the five planets. There's that number. Remember I asked you to remember it? Remember the five cuneiform tablets yielding this new information to go and uncover truth? It's just not their favorite number. No. Five in numerology is the number of death. For you and I, the number of fortress to protect the elites, the Illuminati. You see, the five cuneiform tablets afford the elites the new intelligence, and it's their fortress. They stand on this. It's their stronghold to make you believe that that's their proof, written in stone even, on a cuneiform tablet dug up in the, well, 14th century before Christ. So that's their fortress to say it's the truth. The death part for you and I is in the details. Just listen. This major celestial event now, already begun, will bring Jupiter. Oh! Did you hear the name of the first planet to begin it all? Jupiter, the king planet, will start the action. As the arrival of the Antichrist will start the action. As it is above, so it is below. Jupiter, was to the Romans and what Zeus was to the Greeks. It's the exact same god who reigned from Mount Olympus in Greece and was the king of the gods for the Romans under a different name. To the Babylonians, Jupiter was Marduk. For the Germanic people, the Norse religion, it was Thor. All the same person. Different stories, different group, different time. But the old religion always carried through in the tales. In all instances in history, Jupiter represents the chief god. Spaceman, back with more in a moment. On this first planet, Jupiter, and the other four to follow, that are going to give you a clear sign of a cataclysmic upheaval of immense proportions in the world. I'm Space. More next. I'm a spaceman. It's a view from space here on Talk Radio. AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. And thank you, New York, for your thoughts and what you've been saying about last week. And a couple of other people, too, went in Texas. And I just thank you so much for that. But those on a personal level, I will not air. Now, this first planet to begin all of these five planetary alignment actions coming up, but and I'll tell you when it's going to peak. It's just incredible if you just hang in a few minutes. Jupiter is the king planet. Jupiter was, of course, Zeus to the Greeks. But it doesn't matter what instance in history you pick up. Jupiter represented the chief god. Jupiter is then the first to appear and start things, followed closely by... What else? What have I been saying on this radio show for the last, 20-some years? Mars, the planet of war, follows Jupiter in this alignment. He's next. As you're already aware, all the major combatants of the world have already become involved in the Iraqi, Syrian, Afghanistani, Jordanian, Israeli regions, and are all poised to escalate the fight in a very big way. And the Illuminati-controlled mass media are also teasing you about how much of a powder keg this is and how close it is to just one spark setting it off. Just yesterday, it was stated that the Illuminati-controlled mass media, a Russian Sukhoi jet fighter, came in near contact, a mere 4.5 meters away, a 9 in numerology, from each other with an American F-18 over the Black Sea. So a Sukhoi comes within 4.5 meters of an American F-18. And earlier today, Turkey, as you know, has already shot down one Sukhoi, saying it invaded their territory. They have stated again today that the Russians have again flown into their no-fly zone. This time, no shots fired. Getting heated? I would say you could roast a wiener on it right now. The stories, of course, are designed for propaganda reasons, to push the notion that the United States and Russian warplanes are very close to start shooting at one another. Anyway, this celestial lineup of the star planets led by Jupiter, the king, then by Mars, the war planet, which is closely followed by Saturn next. So, the king appears on the stage. War is imminent. Saturn appears then. It's the sixth planet from the sun. The number of man. The meaning of Saturn is the restful one. from the root meaning Sabbath or day of rest. He's the master of time and space. You see that in Greek mythology. Saturn was called Cronus. He was the leader and the youngest of the first generation of Titans. Cain's bloodline. The divine descendants of Uranus, the sky, and Gaia, the earth. He overthrew his father and ruled the mythological golden age. This is the one the Illuminati are determined to bring back, this return of the golden age, which was, in the days of ancient Atlantis, I touch on later in the show, one world, one ruler. Later, the Romans changed the name Cronus to Saturn, which is where we get Saturn's Day, or what you actually call Saturday today. It's the actual Sabbath day of the week, you know. As a matter of fact, Orthodox Jews see Saturday as the Sabbath, not Sunday. On the Sabbath, it was said in ancient times, you put your sickle down from labor. The KJV Bible even states this policy. God rested, it states, on the seventh day and commanded us to do the same. This speaks of the coming judgment, Saturn, along with the coming harvest. Harvest of what? Harvest of souls, of course, and the harvest of judgment. War brings death and carnage, the harvest of souls. And that is what is meant by the Illuminati's message here. And the celestial display in the heavens that's already begun. But got huge play in the Illuminati-controlled mass media. There was a time, I could go back just 8 years, less than a decade, to tell you that I was the only one who ever talked about planets, who ever mentioned any of the planets and their meanings. Now, it's mainstream media talk show fodder for all the afternoon and midday and morning talk show guys. So the king's appearance, Jupiter, begins it. The war Mars then manifests itself into the picture. And then it's time for Venus to pop into the picture after the Saturn, father of time, harvests many people, death. Venus then pops in. Venus is the second planet from the sun. The astronomical symbol for Venus, of course, is the same one that's used in biology for the female sex. Because, you see, astronomy, or astrology, if you like, it's a very gray line these days, is mixed with science. So that's why biology and astrology have the same symbol for Venus. Venus, representing the female sex. You know, it's the circle with a small cross underneath. The Roman goddess, whose functions were love, beauty, sex, fertility, prosperity, and desire. Venus is the Roman equivalent of the Greek Aphrodite. Venus means, in this message, a double-edged sword is coming. One of passion on one side, and in this world, passion is everything. On the other side, resistance by man to try to resist the passionate desires. So as you can see, it's shaping up. The passionate elites, our overlords, want so badly for this new world order to begin, for this war to begin, so that they can get on with their one world government. That's their passion, their great work. But they have an obstacle. The resistors to this passion of theirs, people who want to keep their own borders and their countries, keep their own culture, keep their own faith. No! Will be your answer. Because you see, Venus also includes not only the passion on one side and the resistance on the other, but this double-edged sword can also be poisonous for those who resist, or life-giving for those who will accept. Who will you be? Who will you choose? The time is coming soon. And the last planet to appear is to be, of course, what else? What this whole thing is all about. The message. Mercury. Mercury is the messenger. Mercury is the closest planet to the sun. I love you, the closest to it. Because you see, the Romans had him as the patron god of financial gain, which is power. Had him as the commerce king to bring money. He's the bringer of messages, communication, including divination of the spirits. He's the god of travelers, boundaries, which will soon all be torn down in this old world. And you will see it right now already, beginning with the EU is showcased right now with the migrants and Schengen. Also, in the meeting this weekend of the future North American Union, yes, as all three foreign ministers rather quietly have been summoned, gathered in Quebec to lay the latest installment on the legal plans that would see all laws dovetail all together completely in unison, along with the United States and Mexico, as well as Canada. The North American Union. Yes, the foreign ministers of the United States, Canada, and Mexico are together this weekend doing the details, working out the details. And when the leaders will meet, things will move in an official matter. But right now, the real work is being done. This weekend. It is a very incredibly busy time for the Illuminati. This last 4 weeks of this auspicious 9 year. Yeah, 2016 is a 9 year. Mercury, by the way, is also the god of luck, trickery, and thieves. He's also the guide of souls to the underworld. You see, Mercury's ancient temple in Rome was situated in the Circus Maximus between the Aventine and Palatine Hills, and was built in 495 BC. You see a couple of forms of the same thing. Listening to the clear messages of the Most High, or seeking to communicate with other dimensions through divination, is Mercury's job. Listening to the clear messages of the Most High spirits. Mercury's statue, by the way, is one of those statues that was covered up. Yeah, pointed out in a news story that you may not have, well, in passing, even noticed. But it was very, very big. And it looms large in the coming events for our very, very, very near future. I'll cover that in a moment. I'm back with more on Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. This is AVFS. I'm the data call Space. You can email me. Got a couple of addresses. Spaceman at 640Toronto.com. One, Space at 640Toronto.com. The other. And thank you, RK, for that little bit of information you sent me in your email. I really appreciate it. I really do. I absolutely do. I appreciate every single one I receive. And thank you for that. Mercury's statue, one of the statues that was covered up when Pope Francis held his meeting with Iran's leader, Hassan Rouhani, earlier this week. Right out of the blue, it almost seemed, right? Well, no, it was very meticulously planned. Of course, Italian officials declined to comment after being ridiculed for covering up the ancient nude statues in Rome's Capitol and museums. And obviously Mercury was one, because Mercury does not have any clothes on. The messenger had to be covered up. A lot of people took offense to it. But the Vatican said they did not want to offend the sensibilities of a visiting foreign dignitary. But being shielded from naked marble wasn't the funniest, weirdest, or most pathetic part of Rouhani's trip to the City of Seven Hills. Far worse was his reception at the Vatican, where Pope Francis fawned all over the Iranian leader, over the puppet head of the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, led regime, directly and indirectly responsible, may I remind you, for the slaughter of Christians across the world. But of course, that was all planned to really offend the Western view anyway, and drive the wedge of hate even deeper, further into the Islamic Judeo-Christian worlds. So just as the politicians who stood on the moral ground to accept all of the migrants, not really refugees, migrants, took the moral ground, but the people did not want them, Pope Francis took the moral ground, but the people did not want Hassan Rouhani to come into their town and have to board up all of their, well, tourist haunts, if you want use base words, because that's what they basically are today. But not to the Illuminati. Those are family members of the ancient bloodline of Nimrod, Cain. So that was all just meant to be a distraction story for all to stare at and be consumed by. But the real truth behind that meeting with Pope Francis and Hassan Rouhani, the puppet head of the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei-led regime, it was all about money and the coming world war. What do I mean by the fact that it was all about money, exactly? The West, you know, has just lifted all sanctions last week on Iran, who can now sell oil on the spot market and the world market, which will drive the oil price again even farther down than it already is, doing more damage to the world's economy, which the elites want to destroy and rebuild to a truly global one, with no borders. One leader, one central bank, one price range for everything in every store anywhere in the world. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that kind of world? It would be accepted right now. If I told you a loaf of bread would be the same as in Kathmandu, as it would be in Paris, France, as it would be in London, England, as it would be in Nairobi, as it would be in New York, as it would be in Toronto, people would welcome that already, wouldn't they? It's on the way. It's the global electronic funds currency. First, your currency has to go down. And down they will go. But you see, the world was consumed with a cover-up of a few statues. Meanwhile, in the back room, Pope Francis is talking money with Rouhani. So they're allowed to sell their oil, and their bank accounts are being unfrozen. That's the other part of that meeting, the unfreezing of the Iranian bank accounts amounting to billions and billions of dollars. Now, I put it to you this way. They have been frozen for many years. Picture the interest rate garnered through the years of being frozen. A great deal of that money was frozen and held in Vatican-owned and controlled banks. You heard me correctly. The Vatican-owned and controlled banks have billions and billions of Iranian money. This meeting was the formal marking of a done deal by banker Pope Francis and the client Hassan Rouhani by the Jesuit Pope, the head of the Vatican banks, and the head of the Shiite Islamic movement in Iran, Hassan Rouhani, as the client. These two Illuminati-controlled men, because the Illuminati always control both sides, are working together to foment World War III. You've heard me say it. It's nothing new under the sun. It's simply history repeating itself. It's been done before. The Vatican secretly helped the Nazis, if you'll recall, in World War II, together to foment World War III. Yes, they secretly helped the Nazis, and they will do essentially the same job with the Iranians in World War III. So Mercury, in this planet alignment, was to make this message of the coming change of cataclysmic proportions blatantly clear to you, and complete this five-planet configuration, all lined up in a row. That points to where? The horizon. Because that's what it does. Starts with the Jupiter King planet at the top, and points down to the horizon. Where do you get the word horizon from? Horus, the first sun god reincarnate from the Immaculate Conception by Isis in the ancient Egyptian mystery religion. He is the king, the coming king, Horus. The bloodline is coming back, or at least the purest member alive today of that bloodline. Mercury, the god of commerce and finance and messages. And that's your five-planet alignment. You'll hear other radio shows go, look at the beautiful lights in the sky. Really? Mm-hmm. Pretty ugly when you really know what the details are. And this all peaks, by the way, and is complete on, of all dates, the exact day of Super Bowl 50 in America, held February 7th, 2016. Oh, by the way, that numerology of 7, February, the second month, a 9, 2016, already a 9 month, that will tell you one thing if you're into numerology at all. It's a 9-way. And a 9-way you cannot break it down anymore. It's just 9 any way you look at it. February 7, 2016 is 9. It's to be held in the city of Santa Clara, California, at the state-of-the-art Levi Stadium, which is the distinction of what is the coming new world order and new regime all about with their energy? Sun worshippers are into solar power. This is the greenest, yes, the greenest and most technologically advanced professional football stadium in the U.S. In Santa Clara. Santa Clara was founded by the first European to visit the valley. His name? Jose Francisco Ortega. In 1769. He founded the area, a Spanish soldier and early settler of Alta California, was Jose Francisco Ortega. a member of the Portola expedition in 1769. Ortega stayed on to become the patriarch of the very important, the very influential, powerful, manipulating Illuminati family called the Californio family. I wonder where California got its name. Yeah, right. The city Santa Clara was named after the Spanish mission that was established there. But wait for it. Who established the Spanish mission? Why, the Jesuits. Pope Francis is the Jesuit. Who is the Pope? Also, in this week's Illuminati-controlled mass media. Big time. You getting the connection now? So I'm wondering if there will be, thinking of San Bernardino, a homegrown terrorist attack kind of style event like San Bernardino on that day. I'm not saying there is, of course not. I'm just saying I wonder if there will be a homegrown terrorist attack. Why? Is this a possibility? So just listen. We're told this particular celestial event I just told you about that culminates exactly on Super Bowl Day hasn't happened for a decade and will occur in another 10 years. The last time the stars aligned this way was 12 years ago, December of 2004. I'll be back with what happened then. It's Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. More next. This is ABFS on AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. Thanks for the email. I really and truly appreciate it. Spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. Bit of news from the UK. I'm not sure, but likely Britain. DB writes, I took pics of chemtrails this summer. They actually did they do diagrams all occasionally. He says they made pyramids with two lines crossing. The all-seeing eye kind of thing. Rained for 2 weeks. I come to you tonight from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, which is the source, one of the sources for the eastern United States cold air that's being forced down there, sometimes as far as Florida. And, of course, across Saskatchewan, where I'm originally from, in Alberta is the other corridor where they blanket that cold air to come down crazily through Oklahoma, giving them tornadoes all the way down into the... It's just incredible with these chemtrails. And I come to you tonight, as I was saying, under a very, very thick canopy of chemtrails. So, America... expect some very cold air and some extreme weather real shortly. As I was saying before the break, again with America, the Super Bowl, February 7th, as this five-planet alignment celestial event by the Illuminati, they've been pushing so hard all of this week, it peaks on that day, February 7th, Santa Clara. Is the city where it will take place. The last time this planet alignment appeared in the sky was 12 years ago, December of 2004. That was the year and month of the Asian tsunami that took place, remember? Everybody was just absolutely stunned, shocked. Abhorred. 230,000 people lose their lives in that Asian tsunami. 230,000 people, another five, the number of death in numerology. This time around, attention was drawn to it just days before NASA announces it thinks they might have this planet alignment spoken of around the time that attention was drawn by NASA, who were announcing that they think they just might have, could have, probably, but not absolutely sure, that they just discovered a ninth planet. Yes, you see, we only have eight right now because Pluto was taken off the list of planets. And it's now only a dwarf planet. They wanted to make room for something. Planet X, the ninth planet, looms in outer space. Yes, the nine number, the egotistical number that keeps on returning to itself. Satan's favorite number. As 2016 is a 9 year, also a leap year, also an Olympic year, a terrorist attack there. Right now they're dealing with Zika, the Zika virus, which will not be covered here on ABS, Talk Radio AM 640 tonight at all. No, I have more. The number of the quarterback of the Denver Broncos, one of the participants and big star, the Superman of quarterbacks in the NFL, the oldest one, wears the number 18, a hidden 666. He's the white guy. The black guy wears the numeral 1 to signify the one to come. The one world order. The one king. The one world. Now it's just been announced that the Denver Broncos are going to wear their white uniforms and the North Carolina Panthers will wear their black uniforms. And you don't even have to listen to this show to pick this up, because it's also on the Illuminati-controlled mass media. Well, not in a big way, but a lot of people are catching on, and they're going, hey, there's something going on here. It's actually being positioned as a race war on the gridiron. I know. It all sounds so, well, too contrived, doesn't it? Because it is. The Carolina Panthers have the Black Panther as their logo. A terrorist organization of black men in the 60s who'd indiscriminately killed whites. They're the bad guys. And the white guys are the Denver Broncos. You know what a bronco is? It's a horse, right? A horse. Poseidon. Atlantis. What is the connection? Poseidon and Atlantis? Poseidon. King Neptune also, known as. The king of Atlantis was the first to domesticate the horse for men to ride. They became the modern day tank in those days. He would load them onto his ships, sail in the water, come to the foreign shore, unload the horses that they had never seen before, and ride into battle. Can you imagine a whole horde army on horseback? First of all, terrifying with the thundering hoofbeats. There's no chance anyone could ever beat them or defeat them. Poseidon ruled the world as it was then in Atlantis. His greatest weapon? The Broncos. Get it? He was the first to domesticate. So that's what you have in this upcoming symbolic gridiron race war. Come February 7. Now, and you had to get Atlantis in because I've even got more on that. That's coming up. The shuttle anniversary was coming up. We're all going to all together, you can see how this was all so carefully and neatly contrived to brainwash you, as I said, indoctrinate you, as I said, into their religion. The new religion. No, it's the old religion. So, I don't know if you've been noticing lately, in America. Yeah, it's always been there, but not this dominant, not this permeating. It's in all things. Haven't you noticed? It started out with white cops killing black unarmed men, even young boys. And then it really started to gain traction with Bill Cosby, who only used white women as victims. Then the Hollywood Awards show, the Oscars. Let me tell you who the Oscar is, by the way, the golden statue. The golden statue is Osiris, the sun god, the very first sun god of the ancient Egyptian mystery religion, father of Horus. The Oscars have no nomination of any blacks for any awards, but they have a token host that's black, Chris Rock. Then they release the name of the person for the made-for-television movie of Michael Jackson. And they announce a white guy to play Michael Jackson. Now, there's been a black president. Both political parties have no black man even close to being considered in the running. In fact, there's only one token black man running for the presidency at all. And he's been a member of both the Republicans and the Democrat parties. Something is going to explode in America through all this racism, this hatred build up by the Illuminati-controlled mass media. Just as they're doing this hatred build up for the Judeo-Christian world against the Islamic world. Oh, yeah. And it just keeps on coming. The Greek gods and goddesses have been spoken of previously only as myths, right? I began the show with this. Myths and legends only. But the Illuminati are now out to show and prove to you once and for all, through their nefarious ways and their power in the media, and through the aid of their black magic spells that include the Illuminati-controlled mass media, that these mysteries will be shown to be closer to the truth. Are you ready for the catchphrase? Than previously thought. Yeah. They're so stuck, they're so bound in their worship of their God, of their rituals, they can easily be found in them every single time. That's why I find them so easy to track. They can't resist. They've got to. They must. They're passionate about it. So, NASA, the greatest black magic spell casting corporation of all time. What they used to nickname me? The spaceman. NASA's worst nightmare. Yeah, that's what they used to call me. Because I don't talk too much about the space program anymore and NASA. Know why? They don't have one. It's gone. That's what I'm talking about. I'll be back with NASA. Then talk about it. Next, Talk Radio, AM 640 Space. Emails, please. If you'd like to write one, to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. If you got some information you'd like to pass along, Just want to say hi, where in the world you're listening to AVFS from. Or if you got a critique of the show, comment on the show, feel free. Let me call this person SF. And he writes, did you know the new television series called Lucifer starts soon on ABC? It's about the devil living in Los Angeles. How appropriate. The city of, what do they call? Angels. And they mean the fallen angels, of course. And the chief fallen angel that fell to earth as a lightning bolt, as the KJV Bible states, is Lucifer, the bringer of light, information, the occult, science, sort of. So NASA, the greatest black magic spell casting corporation all time, has named their future dream interstellar vehicle Orion. That's another constellation in our sky, of course. You see how the Illuminati are fixated on this astrology, numerology, and sacred geometry. Orion is to be NASA's starship that supposedly will carry men and women to go to deep space. It's being built to take humans farther than they've ever gone before, they state. I'll tell you right now, man can no longer, can go no further than about 250 miles up. That's it. That's correct. You heard me. That's what I believe. I believe the rest of it is all videos that have convinced you that there is interstellar travel. And why do they want you to believe that we, humans, man, can now do interstellar travel and actually send objects out and place them in between the belts of Saturn and land things on furthest planets from us? It's ridiculous to think that they can do that when they can't stop someone hacking their server at the HSBC bank. Something isn't quite right, is it? So, I don't believe we can, but here is another one of the myths that NASA has created. Orion will serve as the exploration vehicle that'll supposedly carry the crews to deep space, providing emergency abort capability, as well as sustain the crew during the space travel. So Orion is yet another one of these stranger-than-fiction revelations pulled out of mythology to be accepted by the masses as reality. But it will be, as all other space exploration tales NASA has told you they have so gallantly accomplished, it'll be virtual reality accomplishments only, videos only that you will see going, oh, look, there we are. Virtual reality plays a huge role in the coming deception of the Antichrist. Virtual reality and something called artificial intelligence also is something that Google and others are now working feverishly on. Also, Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook also involved in this. Where the big money is. They have taken it and gone because they are part of an elite group that says, here we have all of this money. We're going to tell you where to put it. Put it into YouTube, Google, Facebook, put it into virtual reality, and artificial intelligence. Orion is from the Greek word Orios, Orion, Ur-ein, to break it down for you. What comes immediately to your mind is the ancient city of Ur. Where is that? Iraq, ancient Sumer. In Latin, it's Ur-ina, which is supposedly a component of RNA that carries hereditary information in cells. RNA stands for ribonucleic acid, a nucleic acid present in all living cells. We're told its main purpose is to act as a messenger, like mercury, carrying instructions from DNA for controlling the synthesis of proteins. Although in some viruses, RNA rather than DNA carries the genetic information, we're told. Confuse you a little? It is kind of confusing, because it's meant to be. When people are confused, they're easier to convince. The lie to. You confuse people, then you simply produce a so-called expert in the field, as I began the radio show with tonight, and tell the people, and they'll then swallow the story, the lie, and believe it. Because the expert was told, we're telling them what the truth really was. I believe this is to be mixed in with artificial intelligence and virtual reality devices to prove, without any doubt, the descendants, everyone in the human race, came from, as to who their descendants were and are, what kind of diseases they will likely to contract, what type of person they will even turn out to be, whether they could have the criminal gene, a propensity to misbehave, or to become a great physicist, or a great footballer, or a great hockey player, which will morph into the science / black magic of designer babies. It's already now, today, being done. And our laws are already now being changed. They were changed last year to allow this kind of research to continue. This will be very, very integral to telling us very near in the future why one group is better than the other group. This is the old caste system back. Yeah, but only established in a very high-tech way. And especially this technology of virtual reality and artificial intelligence will tell us who the elites really are, who our overlords of this world really are, and who is the purest of the bloodline of Cain, Nimrod, to be the purest and most highly connected to Satan's bloodline. These pagans, the Illuminati, have always elevated their great family member heroes to godhood by associating them with various constellations in the sky. For instance, Nimrod represents the constellation of Orion. Now you know why Orion is a name NASA loves to use, especially for the upcoming future mission, because the future king, the bloodline of Nimrod, is even now at the door. Nimrod was called a mighty man, which deemed him as a giant in strength and stature and intelligence who supposedly descended from the Nephilim, who survived the great deluge. In plain talk, it's aliens came to Earth, impregnated human women, left again, and the birth child of that alien and Earth woman was half man, half God, the Nephilim. And they supposedly survived the great flood, the great deluge. He was likely, Nimrod, he was likely one of the Raphaim, what the King James Version of the Bible speaks of. The name Orion even appears in the King James Version, and considering the constellation resembles a hunter, it's not hard to make the connection that this is actually Nimrod, Cain, the bloodline of Satan. Some also view Orion as a type of Christ due to the positioning of the serpent's head being crushed below the constellation's foot. These are the shape of the stars in the sky and the drawings around it. Aleister Crowley came up again on my show that I covered David Bowie's death. Aleister Crowley, the former 33rd degree Mason and Grand Master of the Ordo Templi Orientis, the very secret occult group, taught many things in his lifetime. And like Albert Pike of Masonry, Freemasons believed the transformation of the world to occur during what they called the Age of Aquarius, or New Age of Enlightenment, as it's called by the Enlightened Ones, the Illuminati. This was and is paramount to the agenda of all secret societies. They believe this time period that we're now entering, the Age of Aquarius, is to be the reunion of ancient gods of Atlantis, who are to bring back the golden age of Atlantis as it was once known to the elite's ancestors. Which reminds me, now, time to talk about the 30th anniversary of the Challenger space shuttle this past week, front and center. All of a sudden it was a big deal, isn't it? Let me just run this by you. 30 years anniversary celebrated this weekend, or this week, all through the Illuminati-controlled mass media. Why? Why didn't the Illuminati-controlled mass media do the anniversary on the 10th anniversary, say, or even the 20th, 10 years ago, or even the 25th anniversaries? Why did they just not even mention it then? The answer next. It's AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. This is AVFS. More next. I'm the Spaceman. It's Talk Radio AM 640. The show is called A View from Space. I communicate by email only. No cell phone. I don't even have a cell phone. I have no smartphone. I don't want to know no virtual reality with my face stuck in that all day. Are you kidding me? I would much rather deal with reality and real people who I know who they are. So I have no smartphone. I have no website. I have no Twitter account. I'm not on Facebook. I have two emails. space@640toronto.com and spaceman@640toronto.com. Please feel free to use it. PC writes, I saw this yesterday too, next week, in the month of February, the Phoenix City Council, he writes, will open a prayer by the Satanic Temple. He gets a little cute at the end. Do you think the devil made him do it? No, in Phoenix, Lucifer is God. Phoenix is the ancient Egyptian mystery religion, magical bird that represents empires. And every few thousand years, it immolates itself, burns itself up, and a new phoenix arises. They're the empires. That's why Arizona named Phoenix, Phoenix. And their city council? Yeah. They got a satanic prayer. Led by the satanic temple to open up city council meeting. Well, that's coming up, well, next week as we get a new month underway. And January going by, if you're a rock star, aren't you glad that month's over? That was one killer month for rock stars. So let me just get back online here with Aleister Crowley. Age of Aquarius. They believe this time period, reunion of ancient gods of Atlantis, to bring back that golden age of Atlantis. It's known to the elites as that. And remember now, if you go into the mythology or the symbolism of the mythology, Super Bowl 50. Isn't that incredible? 50. Fortress, end of death number. And they believe that this golden age is going to be brought back. That was once Atlantis. Which brings up the 30th anniversary of the Challenger spacecraft. They had the anniversary this week. Why this year? Why not, as I said before the break, the 10th, the 20th, the 25th? Why not the 7th? Why not the 14th? Why not the 18th? Why not? No, it's numerology. Simply because now is the perfect time. 3, 3, 0. Drop to 0. 3 is the perfect number. The royal number must be evoked because it's the Holy Grail bloodline quest of the great work. It's royal. So it has to be done on the royal year of the anniversary of the blood sacrifice. 33. The great work, you see, is really, in fact, code for the one world government under one ruler. That quest came into focus this past week with the Challenger explosion anniversary, which exploded high over where? A town called Palestine, Texas. Yes, Palestine. The country that does not yet exist. That is going to foment World War III. The Challenger exploded over that very town. That very word had to be invoked. The NASA space shuttle program named all of their shuttles after this quest, this great work, this one world government under one ruler to bring back the golden age of Atlantis. Every single shuttle name screamed this great work quest. How do you say? What do you mean by that? Listen to me. It's a Colombian enterprise to endeavor for the discovery of Atlantis, and all other challengers will be destroyed. I just named all the shuttles in the NASA space shuttle program. And it was in dramatic fashion. The blood sacrifice was done on live television. Billions watched it. You're listening to me right now. You're saying, I saw that live too. You are participating in a blood sacrifice that was done in public for all to see, because that's only when Satan will reward his followers. You can't do a blood sacrifice in private, in the dark corner, and expect to get much reaction. Make it public. You get maximum reaction from your god, Lucifer. And so that's why the space shuttle Challenger blew up over Palestine, Texas. There will again be a Palestine, and soon. Yeah, it was in dramatic fashion that that sacrifice happened, with the number 7, the number of spirit aboard, 5 astronauts. So as I say, I've just named all of the space shuttles in NASA's shuttle program in the Great Work Quest. Again, everything NASA works for is a Columbian enterprise to endeavor for the discovery of Atlantis, and all other challengers will be destroyed. Do you recall the shuttle that performed the final black magic mission? It's very important in this symbology. It used, for the last final mission at NASA, the orbiter Atlantis to bring back the golden age of Atlantis. Get it? Because Atlantis came back from the mission. And it was the final mission, the final statement. NASA could not have used any other shuttle. In fact, they went out of their way to correct this, because originally planned was this. The Space Shuttle Endeavour was to actually fly the final STS mission, dubbed STS-134 mission. And that was to be the final mission in the shuttle series, with Endeavour making that flight. But with the authorization of the STS-135 mission, Atlantis instead became the last shuttle to fly. And why was it nearly Endeavour, you may wonder? Well, because of this. The United States Congress authorized the construction of Endeavour in 1987, and it replaced Challenger. Yeah. What a black magic spell they weave, huh? Now you know what I mean. I'm NASA's worst nightmare. Endeavour was built from spare parts rather than refitting the old and only shuttle that never flew, the Enterprise. The Enterprise never flew a mission. As to why the change of the final flight, NASA obviously did not want the blood sacrifice flight, honoring them to be the last flight. So to honor Atlantis and the Illuminati's future, the return of Atlantis and the Golden Age with it, the orbiter Atlantis was used. Because remember, Endeavour was made up of the parts of other shuttles to replace Challenger. Endeavour could not possibly be the replacement of Challenger. The blood sacrifice vehicle could never do. It had to have the future that a blood sacrifice honor. Atlantis performed the final flight. Back to Orion, Nimrod. It's thought to be a stargate for these ancient ones. According to Masonic sources, the missing head and legs of the constellation Orion are symbolized by the skull and crossbones, which strongly indicated that Freemasonry's veneration of John the Baptist, who was beheaded, by the way, is really the worship of Orion, Nimrod, Tammuz, Cain, Horus. The list goes on, they're all the same. The omission of Orion's head and legs in the constellation of Orion is totally obvious to a discerning eye. If you examine it closely, the constellation of Orion, you'll notice that Orion has had legs and has had his head both chopped off. The Knights Templar had the same kind of ritual killing in biblical times, 5,500 years later, when they were buried. By adopting this ritual, the deceased Knights Templar, you see, became as one with Orion, Nimrod, and by implication, Osiris. The skull and crossbones, Orion's missing head and legs, were also adopted by the Knights Templar as their emblem, their symbol of recognition, and by the British East India Company that sailed around the world dominating space. Back with more Talk Radio AM 640 Radcliffe. I'm the guy I call space. It's a view from space. That's all it is. I communicate by email, spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com, only this way. BR writes, interesting info. Don't have time to go all through it, but thank you so much for that. But I just wanted to acknowledge your contribution to the show, and I really appreciate it, because I appreciate every single one I receive. Thank you. So an alternative spelling for Orion is Arian, or Arian, as in the Aryan race, something that was very, very close to Hitler and his religion, as the Thule Society, as his handlers, that black magic secret organization. According to Richard Hinckley, Tatalus described Arian from Pindar, shortened to Arion, and sometimes changed to Arian. The Arian race were the demigods of, a recurring theme on this show tonight, Atlantis. In the film, the Anunnaki, who relocated to the constellation of Orion. Yes, a war in heaven, and the devil's spirits that were with him went to the constellation of Orion. The Arian, or mastery race theory, is born, which was popularized by the 19th century by that founder of the religion of theosophy, the Russian H.P. Blavatsky. She provided the philosophical framework for the Nazi Holocaust, as a matter of fact. Another source for the master race theory in those early days of the Nazi Party was the occultist Alfred Rosenberg, who was convinced that the Aryan race had originated in the lost continent of Atlantis, which was the source of all ancient occult beliefs. The Aryan race theory claimed a seven-step process of human evolution in which successive races evolve from a lower to a higher form of life. H.P. Blavatsky called these stages root races and identified our current Aryan race as the fifth root race, which followed the fourth race, of course, known as the Atlantean. According to the Aryan root race view of history, survivors of the ancient and highly developed lost civilization of Atlantis would one day endow initiates with highly developed lost civilization of Atlantis information, which would give them esoteric powers and wisdom. I would suggest to you that Steve Jobs of Apple is one. And there are many. These initiates would use their occult powers to create a new race of Aryan supermen later, who would eliminate all inferior races. Now we're working on that as I got into the RNA with you, the DNA, the artificial intelligence, the virtual reality that this will all be played out in, because it won't be real. In other words, as the pre-flood Nephilim sired the Merovingian race, demons will again interpose their DNA into the gene pool of humanity by mating with humans. This is the exact story told in Dagobert's Revenge. Dagobert, of course, a famous member of the Merovingian bloodline, who are the members of the Nimrod Cain bloodline, the purest members. Dr. Carl Jung, the occultist, believed that these UFO sightings are a product of the unconsciousness veiling of an ancient human experience. So if you have spotted a UFO, well, that's just because of your unconscious veiling of an ancient human experience you once had in past lives. This bringing to earth of the Sangreal, the royal blood, the Holy Grail, by UFOs, is the modern-day equivalent of the Nephilim, the Outer Ones, or the Elohim, birthing knowledge and siring a new race of kingly beings for this world. Kingly in the context of the Merovingians, the Windsors in Buckingham Palace, the crowned heads of Europe, whom they're all related to. The Merovingian blood is the blood of kings, the kings of gods from ancient Sumeria and beyond, we're told. The Nephilim have been identified as the fathers of the Merovingians, making them half men, half gods. So that's why this virtual reality and this artificial intelligence is going to state why these people are better than you and why they should leave, and their right to rule. According to the star myths of the Greeks and Romans by Theonikondos, Hesiod said that Orion was the son of Euryale, the daughter of Minos, and of Poseidon, the king of Atlantis, and that to him was granted the ability to walk on the sea as he did on the land. Well, that just takes boats. Let's not get crazy here. But that's what it was. Recall that, being a giant, Orion could wade through the sea with only his head protruding from the water. Summary. Neptune is the Bestii Neptunus, the beast out of the sea, and Orion was his son. As the son of the beast out of the sea, it's interesting that Orion has 17 stars. The death and reincarnation date of Osiris, the ancient Egyptian mystery religion's first sun god, equaling 7 heads and 10 horns. Recognize that at all? The total of stars in Orion is 17. Hesiod says this is Neptune's son by Euryale. To him was granted the ability to run on the water as he did on the land. Could this be possibly mentioned in Revelation, King James Version of the Bible? And I stood upon the land, or the sand of the sea, and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads, 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, upon his heads the name of blasphemy. Revelation 13, Verse 1. Ignatius Donnelly wrote in Atlantis, the Antediluvian World, that 12 gods originally governed Atlantis. These deities were 12 in number. Zeus, or Jupiter, Hera, or Juno, Poseidon, or Neptune, Demeter, or Ceres, Apollo, or Artemis, Diana, even as Artemis's other name, Hephaestus, or Vulcan, Pallas Athena, or Minerva, Ares, or Mars, Aphrodite, or Venus, Hermes, or Mercury, and Hestia, or Vestia, all depending on which mythology of which empire. All the same story, where two names are given to a deity in that list I just gave you. The first name is bestowed by the Greeks, the last by the Romans. Later, Atlantis was comprised of 10 regions, which were ruled by 10 kings. This is what I believe the New World Order will be. 10 regions. The world will be broken up into 10 regions. North American Union, not formed yet, will be. The EU will be essentially what it is now, rejigged a little bit, some kicked out, some not. And around the world we go, breaking it into 10 pieces. 10 regions, 10 districts, ruled by 10 kings, who all report to the King of Kings. Ooh, the Antichrist, the 11th. 10 kings report to one more at the very top of the corporation. The Antichrist. That's why 11 plays such a huge integral role in the chaos that is being committed here on Earth today. And most glaringly, September 11th, 2001. So, later, Atlantis comprised 10 regions, ruled by 10 kings. Shambhala, Victoria LePage, stated that Atlantis had 10 districts, were ruled by 10 kings. Self verified by Donnelly, who elaborates on the sacred numeral 10 as the number of rulers in ancient empires. And as I state many times here, 10 is the number of law. Look at your courthouse and check the number. It'll always break down to a 10. Well, in most cases, the big courts do. The 10 kingdoms of Atlantis are perpetrated in all of the ancient traditions. In the number given by the Bible for the Antediluvian patriarchs, you have the first instance of a striking agreement with the traditions of various nations. Other nations, to whatever epoch they carry back their ancestors, are constant to the sacred number 10. And Chaldea, who I say ISIS really is, they're Chaldean, they are not Islamic. Perosus numerates the 10 Antediluvian kings whose fabulous reign extended to thousands of years. The legends of the Iranian race commence with the reign of 10 Poseidonian. Poseidon, possibly, taken from there, kings. Poseidonian, kings. In Persia, 10 of them. In India, you're confronted with 9 Brahmadikas, who with Brahma, their founder, makes 10, and who are called the 10 Petris, or fathers. There's more, too. The Chinese follow suit with 10 emperors, partaking in the divine nature before the dawn of historical time. What the Germans and Odin, the Norse religion, thought. In a moment on Talk Radio AM 640, I'm Space. Shows a view from space. This is Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. Thank you. I appreciate every single one I get, and I thank you so much. I really love them. Now, as I was saying before the break, 10. Atlantis, comprised of 10 kings. 10 regions, reported to the 11th king. You go through the Chaldeans, antediluvian kings, thousands of years ruling. 10. In India, you're to meet the 9 Brahmaticas, who with Brahma make 10. And who are called the 10 Pitris, or fathers. The Chinese count 10 emperors partaking of divine nature before the dawn of historical time. The Germans believed in the 10 ancestors of Odin. And the Arabs? In the 10 mythical kings of Adites. Orion, although a son of Poseidon, Neptune, did not become a ruler of Atlantis. The first 10 kings of Atlantis were the twin sons of Poseidon, Neptune, the Bestia Neptunus, or beast out of the sea, Atlas, and Eumelus, Amphiers, Navamon, Menesis, Autoclophon, Eliasapus, Mestel, and Azaeus, and Diaprepus, Poseidon, and Cleto had 5 pairs of twins who, along with their descendants, ruled the 10 provinces in which Poseidon had divided Atlantis. The island and the ocean were called after Poseidon's firstborn, Atlas, who was also king over the brothers. His brothers and descendants of their 10 royal houses ruled over many other islands, and also over the Mediterranean peoples living west of Egypt and Tuscany. So that's really what all this chaos in this entire world that you are seeing today. The war in Syria. This world market, stock market debacle. The fighting between Russia and the West again. The Islamic invasion of Europe of migrants. It's all designed to take us one place. To destruction, to replace this new, replace this old, useless, no good, broken down system anymore. It's what we want you to convince you what it is, to the new system, which has a new energy, green, solar. And this has been really not a new story at all. I've been talking about this, the same exact modus operandi in the news for over 30 years. Let me prove it to you. Let me just remind you of something in the past that has happened. Will it be the same exact story as I've been telling you today? I just chose at random the violent clash between a flotilla of ships and the Israeli Defense Force. Ended up 9 dead. You know the drill here with 9. The Gaza flotilla raid. That was that military operation by Israel. This is to demonize the Israelis now, because this happened in 2010, 31st of May. A backward 13. Yeah. See, it's the same routine over and over. It doesn't matter what you cover. This Gaza flotilla raid was a military operation by the Israeli Defensive Force against 6 civilian ships that band together called the Gaza Freedom Flotilla. as I said, backward 13 May 2010, in the international waters of the Mediterranean Sea. 9 were killed. 9 sacrificed for this, to put it on the world stage, so that they could give you all of the symbology and to also demonize the Israelis. For the very first time, really, is when the world started looking at Israel and going, wait a minute, they're a little harsh on those Palestinians. Which, of course, starts people thinking, well, maybe they should have their own land. Maybe the Palestinians should. And then we have the fight. The flotilla, organized by the Free Gaza movement, if you recall, and the Turkish Foundation. Yeah, the Turks, as usual, are meddling in all this for human rights and freedoms and humanitarian relief. So, they decided, we're going to, because the Israelis closed the border at Gaza in this troubled time in 2010, this organization, the Free Gaza Movement, along with the Turks Foundation for Human Rights and Freedoms and Humanitarian Relief, was carrying humanitarian aid and construction materials in 6 ships with the intention of breaking the Israeli blockade, this time at the Gaza Strip on the water. The Illuminati-controlled mass media wanted this event to be ultra-significant at that time in history, just a mere 6 years ago, in which it had the world leaders actually canceling all kinds of meetings around the world and in Israel because of the serious rift this has now caused. Then the then Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu was in Canada at that time to meet with the Canadian Prime Minister when it happened, and had to actually cut short that meeting to fly back home immediately. I remember it vividly. He also was to meet Barack Obama in the White House right after the Canadian visit. But that meeting was also postponed. It was a huge thing with this Free Gaza movement moving in, closing in on the Israeli forces on the sea trying to break through the line at Gaza in the Mediterranean. The meeting is canceled. Netanyahu goes home. And the meeting was, of course, to be about restarting the Palestinian statehood talks that had been on hold for 17 months. There's the birth and reincarnation date of Osiris, the sun god, in the ancient mystery Egyptian religion. Other world leaders didn't share that same view. Canadians and the Americans, staunch allies of Israel then, and had said only that more information would be required before making any statements about the attack on the flotilla, because the IDF attacked the flotilla that was supposedly to be peaceful. Turkey has before making statements about the attack on the flotilla and has been Israel's closest Muslim ally, but Israel was now beginning to lose them. Turkey's prime minister then said this action totally contrary to the principles of international law. It's inhumane. This is state terrorism, demonizing Israelis for the very first time, 2010. Nobody should think we will keep quiet in the face of this. He told that to reporters in Chile, where he cut short his official visit in Latin America specifically to deal with this crisis. This is the Turkish head. And today, with the war in Syria, Turkey plays the same role. Hello? History repeating itself. There's nothing new under the sun. Since the deadly incident took place, there had been a second attempt to reach Gaza by ship, with more aid and activists aboard another ship that was supposedly to have joined the flotilla. But they were never told, never got, never got there, never arrived in time. This ship also had incredible symbolism collected with it. As usual, the ship's name was the Rachel Curie. More on her extremely powerful symbolism coming up on ABS Talk Radio AM 640. So, on June 5th, Saturday, 2010, Israeli troops take control of an aid ship trying to break this blockade of the Gaza Strip. The Israeli military says soldiers boarded the Irish-owned but Cambodian flag-flying MV Rachel Curie from the sea and did not meet any resistance. Notice Irish-owned? Irish are playing that role again today, being the hosts of all the inversion corporations that want to do deals and move for tax purposes over to Ireland because they have a 12% tax rate. For instance, England has a 21% tax rate. Where do you want to park your money? Ireland. So it's an Irish-owned ship they use, but a Cambodian flag is on this MV Rachel Curie from the sea, and it doesn't meet any... The Israeli says the soldiers boarded the ship, didn't meet any resistance, and it said the ship is now being taken to the Israeli port where it would be inspected, the cargo transferred, the aid to Gaza. Very humanitarian. The incident came days after Israeli commandos stormed the Gaza-bound aid flotilla. Clashes on board left 9 people dead, triggering international condemnation and reaction from everywhere. The Illuminati playing this up big is a huge Illuminati event. This was to demonize the Israelis. Not seen in that light before. Only seen as the ones who were picked on by Hamas and Hezbollah. Make a deal with them, and they attack you anyway. Israel learned their lesson over and over on that. It's the Spaceman Talk Radio, AM 640. Morning, right after this break. I'm going to get a call Space. You can email me at spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. I'm talking about the Gaza flotilla. And the Israeli Defensive Force did a raid. It was a military operation by Israel against 6 civilian ships in 2010, taking, well, what they said was hundreds of tons of aid, including wheelchairs, medical supplies, cement. But you see, construction materials were banned from entering Gaza by Israel at this time, which said they could possibly be used for military purposes, so they're not letting it in. Israel had blocked Gaza since 07. This was the third year, 2010, when it all broke loose. June 5, a Saturday, 2010, 11:12 UK time, Greenwich Mean Time. Now here's some numerology embedded in this Illuminati-controlled event. 11:12 UK time, it's a hidden 5. 5 is the number of death to us ordinary humans. But to the Illuminati, the hybrids, half men, half gods, 5 is the number of the fortress, as in protection. The date June, the 6th month, day 5, makes it an 11 day. Also in numerology, adding to the year 2010, to this 6 and 5, which reduces down to a 3, you get a 14. 1 plus 4 is the 5 again, the number of death for the unwashed and the fortress for the protection of the Illuminati. So the Gaza flotilla raid keeps the same numerology as I've been covering over and over on all of the Illuminati events, as I call them, through time. It was the seizure of several ships of the Gaza Freedom Flotilla by the Israeli naval forces. And that aid convoy attempted to land supplies in Gaza by way of the Mediterranean Sea and to thereby break Israelis maritime blockade of Gaza. The six ships departed, but there were actually eight ships that were in the flotilla. The sun worshippers number eight, but more on the other two involved in a moment. The date, the backward May 31st, backward 13 rather, May 31st, 2010, killing 663 people, including activists and journalists. Numerology behind the passenger numbers and meaning, 6 plus 6 plus 3 equals 15, 1 plus 5, 6, symbolizes the population of the world, the number of man. Because it involves all men when you deal with Israel and that area of the world. 37 nations, 3, 7, 10, the number of law, from which the Israelis will be judged. The ships were boarded at 4:30 in the morning. 7 breaks down, number of spirituality. And because the spirits got aboard the float and floated it across. No spirits, no movement. 7, the number of spirituality, 4:30 a.m. So it took off, floating on international waters in the Mediterranean. Israeli sources said the reason their forces boarded their ship, was because the flotilla refused calls to change course and head away. 9 passengers, as I said, the number of completion, Satan's favorite number. They were all aboard the Mavi Marmara, which were shot and killed by Israeli soldiers. The Turkish autopsy result showed most were shot a lot of times, multiple times, some from close range, with 5 being shot from behind. Up to 60 passengers and 7 members of the Israeli Defense Forces were injured. When Israel commandos seized the MV Mavi Marmara, the main ship of the convoy, they rappelled by rope onto the deck from choppers, clashed with passengers right away. The Israeli Defense Force said they were prepared for passive and light resistance, but they were met by a lot of activists armed with metal rods, knives, chains, stun grenades, and firebombs, they said. According to Israeli authorities, the activists also attacked its troops with live ammo from pistols wrested from soldiers. Videos released by the Israeli military and Turkish TV backed the claim that the soldiers were immediately ambushed by angry activists. Passengers, well, they admitted fighting with the Israeli commandos, but defended their actions by saying their ship was boarded by a military force in international waters. The Israeli soldiers opened fire at some point, but the sequence of events is very disputed at this point. Because in war, the first casualty is truth. Some passengers have said that the Israelis opened fire before they even boarded, while they were rappelling down. Other accounts from Israel have said that the firing occurred after the start of the on-deck skirmish. The attack caused a huge international outcry in the Illuminati-controlled media. I mean, they ran with it. And there were immediate reactions from a lot of national authorities, supranational bodies, non-governmental organizations, you know, the usual suspects, as well as civilian demonstrations around the world. Yeah, the ordinary person was shown to get up and care about this. With these, well, unrehearsed protests, the Gaza Freedom Flotilla was actually comprised of 8 ships, as I said. 2 ships, though, you see, never made the rendezvous. Flotilla was organized by the Illuminati to cause some Middle East chaos. More succinctly, to break Israel's naval blockade of the Gaza Strip. You see, the ships were to carry what the activists identified as 10,000 tons of humanitarian aid, with a value of $20 million American dollars, including food and medicine, and building materials like cement, which made up to 4/5 of the cargo's gross weight. And were, of course, banned by the IDF to the Gaza Strip because they could be used for military purposes. Israel, at that time, was preventing cement and other building materials from reaching Gaza, saying that although they got legitimate uses, it might be used to make smuggling tunnels or for explosives and arms. Organizers said that the building materials were necessary to rebuild the infrastructure of Gaza, that it was seriously damaged in the 08-09 war with Israel. This is the Israeli attack on Gaza 7 years ago in December. And I covered that extensively here on AVFS on Talk Radio, AM 640, because it was the Illuminati event of that time. That invasion to Gaza began what he immediately saw was the demonization of Israel in the eyes of the world. Why demonize Israel? Simple. To force Israel to sit down at the bargaining table, to give up some of their land, to create a Palestinian state, which would be the fly in the ointment to begin, foment World War III. Right now, their latest event in this area is, of course, Syria, which has now sucked in the major players on the world stage. But Palestinian statehood is the key to the start of World War III, believe me. The war that will drag the entire world into a global conflagration. This will allow the Illuminati to push the world to the edge of what will be believed to be the brink of annihilation, and force all, with an alien invasion mixed in, I believe, to be complicit to a one-world government being set up when all the smoke clears. Something they call the New World Order, as Jerusalem to be the political capital. One government for one world, one central banking system, a one world religion to replace the ones that must go. All three monotheistic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. If you research it, all the other religions of the world, excluding those three I've just mentioned, fit nicely with the new Luciferian religion of enlightenment. That's soon to come, as I pointed out earlier, with the tens on the show tonight. Yes, there is a plan, and you can clearly see it if you pay attention and have, well, what you would call hindsight. Can you remember what happened a while back to get us to where we are here today? Because if you can't, and because most people have an attention span of about 15 seconds, and then it's forgotten, like a video, hey, see this cat do this thing, look, gone, never to be seen again. Move on to the next video, where the next cat doing the next crazy thing. Over and over and on we go. But no hindsight, no remembrance, no idea of where we've been now, lately even, and where we're going. Because it'll tell you where we're going to end up, if you pay attention. So this Gaza flotilla consisted of 8 originally, but what ended up being 6 ships, owned or chartered by a number of non-government organizations, including the Free Gaza Movement, as I told you, the Turkish were in on it, and the Greek ship were sent to Gaza. The lead ship was the Turkish-flagged Mavi Marmara, which had the deaths, carrying more than 500 on board at the start. But more on that ship in just a minute or so. The symbolism is so strong with this highly charged spiritual event. And here's the symbol and meaning behind the 6 ships in what's now known as, in history, as the Gaza flotilla attack. First, there was the ship called, are you ready? Challenger 1. Did you forget about that? Well, Challenger was again in the news this week. Keeping alive the quest of the Illuminati. Keeping alive the discovery to bring back Atlantis. And its 10 regions. And its bloodline kings. The purest bloodline to run this newest one. It's a Spaceman Talk Radio, AM 640. More right after this break. I've been getting a call Space. You can email me at spaceman@640toronto.com. Or space@640toronto.com. Either one will get you into my inbox. And thank you so much for the one that you have sent me. I absolutely, totally, really appreciate every single one I get. So I'm going through the ships now in the what's known as the Gaza flotilla attack. Happened in 2010, backward 13 in May. I'm just going through the symbology just to make sure you understand that it's the same story we're hearing over and over again, wrapped up in different new news stories. First, it was the ship called the Challenger 1. It was the U.S. flagged, of course, Challenger 1. It was operated by the Free Gaza Movement. The story of this ship is extremely telling on the behind-the-scenes activities of the Illuminati. Here you have an American ship flying Old Glory, as they call their flag, the flag of Israel's best friend and money partner and weapons supplier of the highest technology in the world. Except for, I believe, the Russian Sukhoi jet. Can't beat it. And they can't beat it. Now, Challenger 1, flying Old Glory, flying Israel's best friend in the whole wide world, the USA, about to take part in an anti-Jewish operation that was about to become highly charged, deadly international incident on the high seas. I tell you the intriguing fate of Challenger 1 in a few minutes here on ABFS Talk Radio AM 640. The second ship is named the MS Sophia. The MS Sophia is a Greek-flagged cargo ship operated by the Swedish-Greek organization Ship to Gaza, also called the Eleftheri Mesogeios, meaning Free Mediterranean in Greek. The third ship was the Stendoni. The Stendoni is another Greek-flagged passenger ship operated by the Greek Ship to Gaza and the European campaign to end the siege of Gaza. She left the port of Piraeus together with the Sophia on May 25 to rendezvous with the rest of the flotilla of Cyprus. The Gaza was the fourth ship in the Gaza flotilla. The Gaza, meaning Gaza in English, is a Turkish-flagged cargo vessel owned and operated by the Turkish Islamic Charity Group. Its cargo had, they said, 2,104 tons of cement, 600 tons of construction steel, and 50 tons of tiles. So as you can see, the Islamic contribution was also possibly could be used for weaponry. It also carried 13 Turkish crew members and 5 activists. It left Antalya on the 22nd of May to rendezvous with the flotilla along with the Mavi Marmara and another ship called the Divine Y. The Divine Y is the fifth ship in the sixth ship flotilla. The Kirbis flagged Divine Y, Laurel Y, is a cargo ship owned and operated by the Turkish Islamic Charity once again. What did it carry? A mix of goods, including 150 tons of iron, 98 power units, 50 preset homes, 16 units of children's playground equipment, and a whole bunch of other specialist medical equipment. There were 23 crew members aboard and 7 activists. It left Italia on May 22 at a rendezvous with the flotilla also, along with the Mavi Marmara and the Guz. Kirbis became independent from the United Kingdom in 1979. See the Define Why had the Kirbis flag on it. Was flying a Kirbis flag. As I say, Kirbis became independent from Britain in 79. It's a member of the Commonwealth Nations, though. It's a member of the IMF, the World Bank, became a full member of the United Nations in 1999. So Kirbis was named the Gilbert Islands after the British Captain Thomas Gilbert, who sighted the lands in 1788 on one of his trips. The current name, Kirbis, is actually an adaptation of Gilbert's from British Captain Thomas Gilbert, from the former European name Gilbert Islands. So you know who's behind this whole thing, the Define Why Fifth Ship. Cannibalism among the Gilbertese ancestors in Samoa was secondary to the offering of human heads and sacrifice to certain deities, by the way. So the Gilbert Islands were very bloodthirsty for blood sacrifices and cannibalism. The Kirbis flag flew on the cargo ship operated by the Turkish Islamic Charity. It's also a form of organized headhunting practiced to supply the deities with their food, as they called it. The heads of those who were the firstborn and bearded and bald were preferred for ritual reasons on these Gilbert Islands with the natives. And the spiritual powers to whom sacrifice was made were Ariaria, a god believed to dwell in the top of the ancestral tree, and Batuku, who was associated with an enormous ancestral skull. There seems to be a connection between these two things and the moon. The ritual of sacrifice was connected with a sacred volcano on the Gilbert Islands with the natives called Mangatubu, the home of the tree god and the skull god. The connection of Batuku and the skull god with the moon is astounding, because the association of cannibalism with beings who dwelt in the sky comes down to a being called Tahaki by the beings who dwelt in the sky. And this is told by the Maori tribe who lived in the Gilbert Islands. They believe Tahaki is descended from a cannibal grandmother named Watetri, who was not only a sky goddess associated with cannibalism, and it's even better to find in some versions of the story, put Tahaki eventually with his grandmother in heaven as a deity of lightning. So it's easy to put it together here. In ancient Greek myths, Zeus, of course, whom I've equated with Satan many times on this show, used lightning bolts as his main weapon. So that makes this deity, Tahaki, who was worshipped on these islands, one and the same. Tahaki was Zeus. Satan disguised as yet another name. Same spirit, different name. The Merovingian sorcerer king's bloodline, causing all of the disruption in today's world, were the first to circumnavigate the earth and plant their horrific satanic religion around the world in all cultures. The sixth ship was the Mavi Marmara, the only ship in which there was violent confrontation and death. The Mavi Marmara, or the Blue Marmara, is a Comoros-flagged passenger ship, which was formerly owned and operated by Istanbul Fast Ferries Company in the Sea of Marmara. It was purchased especially for the trip to Gaza by the Islamic Humanitarian Organization. The Mavi Marmara, it was chocked full of Illuminati symbolism, beginning with the double M as in Mary Magdalene. The Merovingian blood extends through her to connect the sorcerer king bloodline with Jesus Christ as he supposedly escapes the cross in Jerusalem and flees to France with his wife Mary Magdalene, whom he marries later and fathers children, thereby mingling the blood of the Merovingians with the royal blood of the house of David. This fulfills the biblical prophecy of the Savior of the world coming from the house of David, which will be proven, by the way, when he does arise via the artificial intelligence and the virtual reality powers. By marrying the Magdalene, Jesus would have been reuniting the two royal families and fortifying his position as priest-king of the true royal bloodline, and any offspring would be doubly rightful heirs to the throne of Jerusalem. Now do you see why this flotilla? The consternation that's being fomented in the Middle East today? Yes, this group. Not only is there that connection, but the name of the troubled ship, the Mavi, or the Blue Marmara. The word Mavi means blue, and is very eerily similar to a world nobody heard of until that is James Cameron's movie Avatar. That, when I return on Talk Radio AM 640. The Spaceman, this is AVFS. That's all it is. I'm the guy to call space. It's Talk Radio AM 640. I communicate, as you know, one way only: email spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. J.A., wondering about the Sukhoi jet fighter I was talking about earlier, and it sent me a whole bunch of links, one of them called Wings Over Russia, which mentions the Sukhoi 35. If you're interested in aviation at all, like I am, I have a couple of uncles in the Royal Canadian Air Force. One a flight trainer, fighter pilot trainer, and the other ground crew member. A lot of information I get. I don't think the way they do. I was never a military brat. I'm a product of the third brother that was in the Canadian Army and checked out right after WW2. But let me get back to the Mavi Marmara, or the Blue Marmara, the Comoros flag passenger ship, the only one to have the deaths. The word Mavi means blue, and eerily similar to a world nobody has heard of until James Cameron's movie Avatar came out. You see, the aliens, also seen as heroes, by the way, in this movie of James Cameron, were called the Navi. Remember the Navi in Avatar? Were also blue-skinned people. Spirit is symbolized by the color blue, as in the blue sky, where heaven is. Also, blue is the color of the water, which is where the bloodline of the Merovingians mythically, supposedly began, with the first being Merovi born. Merovi, the first of the Merovingian bloodline, had two fathers, While the queen was already pregnant by her husband, King Clodio, Merovine's mother supposedly went swimming in the ocean, where she was either seduced or raped by a marine creature called a kinotaur. Also, that act impregnated her. When Merovee was born, the blood in his veins commingled that of the Frankish ruler and the mysterious sea creature. And that is supposedly where the beginning of the Merovingian sorcerer king bloodline began. The Merovingians were Sicambrian or Frankish kings, half man, half god, with their ancestors being from another world. Aliens! Being the 5th and 7th centuries where they ruled large portions of what are now France and Germany. The period of their rise corresponds to the time frame of the king in Britain who ultimately became known as King Arthur. Through the stories of Arthur, didn't really become widespread for several more centuries, though, but it's told there also. So you see how all of this is very devilishly, but very, very creatively and intricately interwoven. Illuminati-inspired scientific evidence tells you that about 11,600 BP, an impulse rupture earthquake hit Kerch, Crimea, Ukraine. Archaeologists use the connotations abbreviated by the letters BP to mean years before the present. So this is 11,600 years before the present, which avoids the whole philosophical debate about AD, BC versus CE and BCE. So the archaeologists use BP, before the present. So this is 11,600 BP. Anyway, Illuminati-inspired scientific evidence turns up, somehow, by the archaeologists. And this is supposedly the earthquake that caused the Manych-Kerch gateway to fracture, allowing the entire Caspian Sea, which was, we're told, already overflowing from glacial melted waters, to spill into the area of the present Sea of Azov. The earthquake also supposedly caused this area of the present Sea of Azov to sink 8 to 10 meters and fill with water from the overflowing Caspian Sea. The Kerch Peninsula did not sink because it is located in origin formation. The earthquake then generated a tsunami in the Black Sea, driving waves inland, further inundating the Sea of Azov, and sending waves up the river channels, which were already swollen from the glacial melt waters. One-third of Europe drains into the Black Sea, which had risen to 20 meters below its current level. The tidal wave broke over the Sakarya River Delta into Lake Sapanka and Izmit Basin. This supposedly accounts for the presence of the Caspian Sea mollusks that are in the Black Sea, the Sea of Marmara, and the Dardanelles. The increased hydraulic pressure, you see, supposedly, with this Illuminati-inspired scientific research, aided by the earthquake and aftershocks, fractured a proposed subterranean outflow channel from the Black Sea into the Mediterranean Sea, which ran beneath the Bosphorus land bridge and the Sea of Marmara. A series of three magnificent fountains as geysers were said to have broken through the fracture and erupted in the area of the present Sea of Marmara. The mixture of churning water and debris inundating the fertile plains of the northern Aegean Sea area left only the bare bones as islands as recorded by Plato. This caused the sea level of the Black Sea to fluctuate due to varying climatic conditions. So the Black Sea level rose again during the world ocean level rise about 5,600 BC. Increased hydraulic pressure, we're told, probably aided by tectonic activity, and in around the Sea of Marmara, caused the Bosphorus land bridge to fracture. The breaching of the Bosphorus land bridge, great big piece of dirt between these two great bodies of water, instigated another thunderous discharge of floodwaters cascading into the Mediterranean Sea, we're told. Yeah. From the Black Sea, as proposed in the Great Atlantis Flood. The Bosphorus Sea is a strait that forms part of the boundary between Europe and Asia. The exact cause for the formation of the Bosphorus still remains the subject of a lot of serious debate among geologists. Thousands of years ago, the Black Sea became disconnected from the Aegean. The Aegean Sea. Some have even argued that the resulting massive flood of the inhabited and probably farmed northern shores of the Black Sea were thought to be the historic basis for the flood stories found in the Epic of Gilgamesh, as it's known, in the Bible, in Book of Genesis, recorded there, chapter 6 through 9. But there's also evidence for a flood of water going in the opposite direction from the Black Sea into the Sea of Marmara. The name comes from the Greek word Bosphorus. Its etymology is from bos, meaning ox, and poros, meaning of passing a river, a ford, a ferry. What a ford is a crossing of a body of water that you can make it away, make it across. Put the meaning of ox and porous together, and you get oxen passage. Meaning people could walk and take their animals across this great body, those two great bodies of water, with this oxen passage, the Bosphorus. The similar ancient Greek word for passage or strait is potmos. The Greek analyzed it as Oxford. In English, or shallow sea, ox passage, and associated it with the myth of Io's travel after Zeus turned her into a heifer for her protection. And I talked about the goddess Io, who is worshipped around the solstice, December 21st. And it was just this Christmas I was talking about, Io, where they would go through the streets shouting her name, which will invoke you to know where the word that we use so often today really actually comes from, and who it's actually really calling. They would go through the streets going, "Yo, yo, yo, yo." And isn't that exactly the way millions of people greet one another every day? That bit of mythology carried through in modern day speech. Keeping it alive, you understand? Yeah. It's always been thought to be a Thracian form of the word phosphorus, meaning light-bearing, a word synonymous with the goddess Hecate. And as I've already stated, there were also a couple of other ships, but they had not yet met up with the flotilla at the point of apprehension by the Israeli Defense Force. But you can see how the words that we have today are carried through, carrying with it this weighty religion the elites want us to adopt. The MV Marmara, Mavi Marvra, Marmara, used in that particular attack on the Gaza, known as the Gaza flotilla attack. Another one of those ships was the MV Rachel Corrie flying the Cambodian flag, the ship that set out again to deliver aid to Gaza. The Cambodian flag, Irish Rachel Corrie, is named after Rachel Corrie, an American college student crushed to death by an Israeli army bulldozer while protesting house demolitions in Gaza, and was unable to join the rest of the flotilla because of mechanical problems that forced it to undergo repairs in Malta. But you see, even that, if you'll recall, the woman standing in front of the bulldozer in Israel, more demonization, run over by the operator of that caterpillar pushing the dirt in the Gaza. More on this, the Rachel Corrie. And who Rachel Corrie was, the symbology behind it, coming up on Talk Radio AM 640. Remember I told you, I'd tell you how the Challenger wound up. That's next, too. Oh, we got to call the Spaceman. It's Talk Radio AM 640. I make it by email. Spaceman@640toronto.com or simply space@640toronto.com. Thanks for the one that you sent me. So as I said, there were originally eight ships, six ships I've told you about in their names, and how deep do those names go? I mean, it has all of the lore, all of the symbology, all of the mythology, all wrapped up in it, as does every single Illuminati event. If you care to look deep enough and have a memory that's long enough, you will see the plan as clearly as I. Two ships didn't get there. One, the MV Rachel Corrie, flying the Cambodian flag. I told you who it was named after. Israeli army bulldozer. Bulldoze her to her death. Because you see, this whole thing was about demonizing Israel for the very first time, really, in the world's eyes. Because many said, wait a minute, I think they went too far here. They'd better sit down and talk to the Palestinians now. That's bad. The other ship, because there were eight originally, the Sun Worshippers number, of course, the other ship was called the United States Challenger. It was also on the way to the rendezvous with the Gaza flotilla. The United States, the greatest, the most powerful friend of Israel. If this particular ship would have been involved and been boarded by the Israeli Defense Force, it would have caused a huge controversy, as they say in the EU. A U.S. ship flying the Stars and Stripes, intercepted, detained forcibly by the Israeli military? Well, this would be awfully embarrassing, wouldn't it? So, are you ready? Do you know why the U.S. Challenger didn't get forcibly boarded? The U.S. flagged Challenger, a Free Gaza Movement ship, was also unable to join the rest of the flotilla due to mechanical problems. Uh-oh! Couldn't get it started. I don't know what happened there, but boy, we should have been there. We could have. How convenient is that? Wouldn't you say? Convenient? It's supposedly undergoing repairs after that incident in northern Cyprus right then. They're getting it fixed, though. Could join, and they never did. The Free Gaza Movement actually suspected sabotage by Israeli agents to be the cause of the malfunction on Challenger. How about you? I think another Challenger was destroyed. wasn't it? Can you believe the cause of the malfunctions? Can you believe it? The two ships flying the flag of the United States of America don't ever get in on the action. Imagine, not just one, but both ships experience mechanical problems, keeping them from the melee, keeping them protected. So, there are originally eight ships involved in some way or another in the Gaza flotilla attack. Two Grecian, one Turkish, one Cabassian, one Camosian, two American, one Irish, flying the Cambodian flag. That was the death ship, the Blue Marmara. Two ships had really become the main or most important symbology of that story. And they are the death ship, the Blue Marmara, and the Rachel Corrie. Yeah. Had five previous names, by the way, the Rachel Corrie, so you know they tagged that name onto it just so you would get the picture. Rachel Corrie, born April 10th, 79, was an American member of the International Solidarity Movement. She was crushed to death in Gaza on the strip by an Israeli Defense Force bulldozer when she was kneeling in front of a local Palestinian's home, acting as a human shield, attempting to prevent the Israeli Defensive Force from demolishing the house. She was 23 years old. 23 is a number that the Illuminati love to use. You know why? Because 23 is that inquisitive number that they keep saying affects everyone deeply around the world. Everyone. So whenever an event has the number 23's connotation, it will involve deeply everyone around the world. I mean deeply. It will actually have an impact on your life. So far, we'll see if this blood sacrifice of this 23-year-old in Gaza in 2003 plays out to be part of the event that does touch everyone deeply around the world, as in World War III. Because this was a catalyst for it, a disruption for it, a bit of chaos created for this war. Now, in the IDF, their defense, they claimed that the death was due to the restricted angle of the view of the IDF Caterpillar or D9 bulldozer driver. And some eyewitnesses said there was nothing to obscure the driver's view. She was a student at the Evergreen, get it? Evergreen State College. Evergreen, by the way, is pine cone, the pine. Everlasting life is evergreen because, you see, the evergreen never dies. It never has its leaves die and go brown and fall off. It represents everlasting life, as does the pine cone. She was a student at the Evergreen State College. She'd taken a year off, traveled to Gaza during the second Intifada. Yes. She was raised in Olympia, Washington. Again, Olympia. The mountain Olympia, where the gods lived in ancient Greece. She's now being transformed into a goddess, all right. She was the youngest of three royalty there, of Craig Corrie, an insurance exec, and Cindy Corrie, an amateur flautist. Cindy Corrie described her family as an average American family, politically liberal, economically conservative, middle class. After she graduated the Capital High School, where she went, Corrie went on to attend the Evergreen State College, as I said, located in Olympia, where she took art courses. She took 1 year off from her studies to work as a volunteer in the Washington State Conservation Corps. Other volunteer work included weekly visits to patients with mental disorders for 3 years. In her senior year, she proposed an independent study program in which she would travel to Gaza, join protesters from the International Solidarity Movement, and initiate a sister city project between Olympia and Rafah. But when it came to her peace work, it ended in violence to her person. So you can see how the Illuminati bury their story and their castes. So why do I talk about Rachel Curry? The connections with Ireland? Like everything else, because it had an Irish flag, remember? The Rachel Curry ship had an Irish flag? Because like everything else the Illuminati do, it's about symbolism. You would naturally expect, in view of the geographical position of the country of Ireland, to find Ireland colonized at an early day by the overflowing population of Atlantis. Because that's how the mythology goes. And in fact, the Irish history tells you that the islands around it and Ireland was settled prior to the flood. Because there were other islands besides Ireland until they disappeared after the flood. And the oldest legends, an account is given of three Spanish fishermen who were driven by contrary winds on the coast of Ireland before the deluge. And after these came the Formorians, who were supposedly led into the country prior to the big flood by one called Validi Banba, or Kesair. Her maiden name was Ehrni, or Berba. She was accompanied by 50 maidens and 3 men, Biff, Ladra, and Fintain, as the myth goes. Ladra was their conductor, who was the first buried in Hibernia, which is where all the oil is, the Hibernia and the North Sea. That ancient book, the Cinn Drom Snachta, is quoted in the Book of Ballymote as authority for this legend. Now, the Irish annals speak of these ancient Formorians as a warlike race who settled after the deluge, according to the annals of Cormacnoi, were a sect descended from Cham, son of Noah, and lived by piracy and spoil of other nations, and were in those days very troublesome to the whole world. Were not these inhabitants of Atlantis who, according to Plato, carried their arms to Egypt and Athens, whose later destruction had been attributed to divine vengeance invoked by their arrogance and oppressions? You see, the secret is, really, that the tribe of Cain is in truth this warring tribe of the Formorians, who migrated from ancient Sumer, circumnavigated the world with their ships via the stars, and left the impression to all of these cultures that they were gods. I mean, how else could you describe someone who could sail from so far away? Because the ships in those days would never lose the sight of land for fear of going off the edge of the earth. But these, no, came from so far off because they knew the Atlantean secret knowledge of sailing by the stars. Space, back with more. Talk Radio AM 640.
We got to call Space. It's a view from Space. Emails to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. Yeah, Atlanta seems to be kind of like, I don't know, I guess, well, let's call it the theme for tonight's show, because it's always been the theme for the Illuminati-controlled mass media and the elites
through the symbology of all of the stories, weaving in or out. So the Formorians were from Atlantis, originally the first settled island, we're told. They were called Fomharak, Fomharak, or Afrak, or Formach, which has been translated in English as Formorians. They possessed ships, and the uniform representation is that they came as the name Fomorag, Afrag. It indicated from Africa. But in that day, Africa did not mean the continent of Africa. Aha! Now you can understand it a bit better. Major Wilford, in the 8th volume, The Asiatic Researches, points out that Africa actually comes from the word apar, afar, apara, apareka. Terms, words used to signify the West. That's all. Just as now we speak of the Asian world as the East. When therefore the Fomorians claimed to come from Africa, they simply meant they came from the West. In other words, from the island of Atlantis. Because there was no other country except America west of them. This bloodline possessed Ireland from so early a period that by some of the historians, they're spoken of as aboriginals of Ireland. The first invasion of Ireland, subsequent to the coming of the Fomorians, was led by a chief called Partholan. His people were known in the Irish annals as Partholan's people. They were also probably Atlanteans. They were from Spain, that area where Spain is now located. There's a group of people in Spain that claim they're from the ancient Atlantean island. A British prince, Goguntius, or Gurmund, encountered off the Hebrides fleet of 30 ships filled with men and women, led by one Partholan, who told him that they were from Spain and seeking some place to colonize. The British prince directed them to Ireland. Spain in that day was the land of the Iberians, the Basques, that is to say, the Atlanteans. The Fomorians defeated Partholan's people, killed Partholan, and drove the invaders out of the country, so says the history of ancient Ireland. The Fomorians were a civilized race. They had a fleet of 60 ships and a strong army, it's written. The next invader of the dominions was Nivet. He captured one of their fortifications, but it was retaken by the Fomorians under Mork. Nivet was driven out of the country, and the Atlanteans continued in undisturbed possession of that island for another 400 years. Then came the Fyrbolgs. They conquered the whole island, divided into five provinces. They held possession of the country for only about 37 years when they were overthrown by the... Here comes the tribe of Cain by the Tuatha Danann, a people more advanced in civilization, supposedly, so much so that when their king, Nuhara, lost his hand in battle, Credni, the artificer, we're told, put a silver hand on him, the fingers of which were capable of motion. This great race ruled the country for more than 197 years. Then they were overthrown by an immigration from Spain, probably from the Basque or Iberians, more Atlanteans, the sons of Milet or Milesius, who possessed a large fleet and a strong army. This last invasion of Ireland took place around the year 1700 BC, so that the invasion of Munich must have occurred about the year 2334 BC. And you've got no idea to assign a still earlier date for the coming of Parthenon's people, and an earlier still occupation for the country by the Formorians from the west. But in the Irish historic tales, called Catha, or Battles, as given by the learned O'Curry, a record is preserved of a real battle which was fought between the Tuatha De Danann and the Fearbolgs, from which it appears that these two races spoke the same language, and that they were intimately connected with the Fomorians. As the armies drew together, the Fearbolgs set out Breas, one of their great chiefs, to survey the camp of the strangers. The Tuatha De Danann appointed one of their champions, named Sring, to meet this other emissary of the enemy. These two warriors met and talked to one another over the tops of their shields, it's said in mythology, and each was delighted to find that the other spoke the same language. A battle followed anyway, in which Nunda, king of the Fearbolgs, was slain. Breas succeeded him. He encountered the hostility of the bards and was compelled to resign the crown. He went to the court of his father-in-law, Ileth, a Formorian sea king or pirate. Not being well received, he repaired to the camp of Balor, of the Evil Eye, a Formorian chief. The Formorian headquarters seemed to have been in the Hebrides. Breas and Balor collected a huge army and navy and invaded Ireland, but were defeated in a great battle by these black magicians, the Tuatha De Danann, the bloodline of Cain. These particulars would show the race identity of the Fearbolg and the Tuatha De Danann, and also their intimate connection, if not identified with the Fomorians. The Tuatha De Danann seem to have been a civilized people, besides possessing ships, armies, and working in the metals. Cain, the first metallurgist, was Tubal Cain. He smelted metal to forge weaponry. They had an organized army of surgeons, too, whose duty it was to attend the wounded in battle. They also had a bardic of druid class to preserve the history of the country and the deeds of the kings and their heroes. And according to ancient books of Ireland, the race known as the Parthenon's people, the Numidians, the Fearbolgs, and the fearful Tuatha De Danann, and the Milesians, were all descended from just two brothers, sons of Magog. That's Russia. Sons of Japheth, son of Noah, who escaped from the catastrophe which destroyed his country. That Japheth is the father of Russians, all Russians. So, all these races were Atlantean. They were connected with the African colonies of Atlantis, meaning the West, when I say African, the Berbers, and with the Egyptians. The Milesians lived in Egypt, and they were expelled. They stopped a while in Crete, then in Scythia. Then they finally settled in Africa at a place called Gaetulich, or Getulia, and lived there during eight generations, say 250 years worth. Then they entered Spain, where they built Brigantia, or Braganza, named after their king, Breogan. And they lived in Spain a long time. Milesius, who was a descendant of Breogan, went on to an expedition to Egypt to took part in the war against the Ethiopians, married the king's daughter, Skota. He died in Spain, but his people soon after conquered Ireland because Skota ended up in Ireland. I've told that story before, too, here on AVFS on Talk Radio, AM 640. On landing on the coast, they offered sacrifices to Neptune, Nimrod, Poseidon, the god of Atlantis. The book of Genesis, chapter 10, gives you the descendants of Noah's three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And we're told the sons of Japheth were Gomer, then, and Magog, and Madai, and Javan, and Tubal, and Meshech, and Tiras. And we're then given the names of the descendants of Gomer and Javan, but not of Magog. Josephus says the sons of Magog were the Scythians. The Irish annals take up the genealogy of Magog's family where the Bible leaves it. The Book of Invasions, the kin of Drom Shnekta, claims that these Scythians were the Phoenicians. And we're told that a branch of this family were driven out of Egypt in the time of Moses, wandering through Africa for 42 years, sound familiar? And passed by Lake Silvae to the altars of the Philistines, and between Ruzakada and the mountains Azure, and he came by the river Monlon, and by the Sea of the Pillars of Hercules, and through the Tuscan Sea, and he made for Spain. Stayed there for many years. Increased, multiplied, and his population grew greatly. From all of these facts, it appears that the population of Ireland came from the west, not Asia. That was one of the many waves of population flowing out from the island of Atlantis. And here's where we find the explanation of that problem, which has puzzled the Aryan scholars. As Ireland is farther from the Punjab than Persia, Greece, Roman, or Scandinavia, it had followed then that the Celtic wave of migration must have been the earliest sent out from the Sanskrit center. But it's now asserted by Professor Schlechter that the Celtic tongue shows that it's separated from the Sanskrit origin tongue later than the others, and that it's more closely allied to the Latin than any other Aryan language. This is entirely inexplicable upon any theory of any Eastern origin of the Indo-European races, but very easily understood if you recognize that the Aryan and Celtic migrations as going out about the same time from the Atlantean fountainhead. More next. Talk Radio, AM 640 on Space. I've got to call Space. This is a view from Space on Talk Radio, AM 640. Just giving a little background on where the great work really actually stems from, what they believe, what the Illuminati actually think, and how this world was populated, and what they want to do in the future with it. Because I believe if you don't know where you're from, you don't know where you are today, you don't know where you're going either. So there's many points confirmatory in this belief. In the first place, the civilization of the Irish dates back to a vast antiquity. And we've seen their annals laying claim to an immigration from the direction of Atlantis prior to the deluge, with no record for those people of Ireland, subsequently destroyed by the deluge. From the Fomorians, who came before the deluge, to the Milesians, who came from Spain in the historic period of the flood. The island was continuously inhabited, you see, Ireland was, visited by many nations, peoples. Now it's visited by many nations, corporations, for their tax break purposes. This demonstrates that these legends did not come from Christian sources, as the Bible record was understood in the old time to imply a destruction of all of those who lived before the flood except Noah and his family. Because that's what the Bible states. It confirms the view that before the flood, the deluge was a local catastrophe, didn't drown the whole human family, that the coming of the Formorians had been, remember I told you about the flooding of the Black Sea? That was supposedly this great Noah flood with his family. Didn't flood the whole world, flooded that area. A local catastrophe. Did not drown the whole human family. That the coming of the Formorians had been before the deluge, that great cataclysm, was of comparatively recent date, since the settlement of the Irish, and of Ireland, and that as the deluge was a local catastrophe, it must have occurred there then somewhere not far from Ireland, to have come to their knowledge. A rude people could scarcely have heard in that day of a local catastrophe occurring in the heart of Asia. How would they ever find out? Through email? No. Passenger pigeon? Telegraph didn't have it, you know. I mean, there's no way they could have gotten the word. I mean, even in England, in ancient England, when it was all being settled, the bards were the news guys. The bards would go and sing the songs of the great deeds the king did, and the heroism that he had, that he did. Recounting all his great battles. I mean, they were the news guys of those days. The bards would come and put the little show on in your little town and move on, and you just got the news. You'd have to wait till those bards came back again to find out what happened. And you'd find out, well, a bunch of years later after it happened, a long time after it happened. So you can imagine, in the earliest times in Noah's day, how did they know the other side of the world? They were being flooded in that one particular area. The Greeks, you know. Well, there are many evidences that the old world recognized Ireland as possessing a very ancient civilization. In the Sanskrit books, referred to as Hiranya, the island of the sun. Sun worship, of course. In other words, as preeminently the center of that religion, which was shared by the ancient races of Europe, Asia, Africa, and America, eventually. It's believed that Ireland was the garden of Phoebus of the Western mythologists. The Greeks called Ireland the Sacred Isle, Ogygia. Nor can anyone conceive why they should call it Ogygia. Unless perhaps from its antiquity, for the Greeks called nothing Ogygia unless it was extremely ancient. And Ogygia was connected by the Greek legends with a first deluge, and that Ogygia was a quite mythical personage lost in the night of ages. It appears as another confirmation of the theory of the Atlantis origin of these colonies that their original religion was sun worship. This, as was the case in other countries, became later overlaid with idol worship. In the reign of the king, Tutmosis, the worship of idols was introduced then. The priests constituted the order of the Druids then, sun worshippers. Of course, many analogies have been found to exist between the beliefs and customs of the Druids and other religions, which were drawn from Atlantis, sun-worshipping Atlanteans. That was the only religion in the Atlantean days, both in Europe and America. I tell you, these people want the discovery of Atlantis again, just as I stated in the shuttles. Yes. The Columbian effort for the endeavor to discover Atlantis. That's what they want to bring back. it would appear probable that the religions of the Druids passed from Ireland, England, and France. Then the transmigration of souls was one of the articles of their brief, long time of Pythagoras. It had probably been drawn from the storehouses of Atlantis when it passed to the Druids, then to the Greeks, then to the Hindus. The Druids had a Pontifex Maximus, to which they yielded entire obedience. Here again you see a practice which extends to the Phoenicians, the Egyptians, the Hindus, the Peruvians, the Mexicans. The Druids of Gaul and Britain offered human sacrifices, while it's claimed that the Irish Druids didn't. This would appear to have been a corrupt aftergrowth imposed upon the earlier and purer sacrifice of fruits and flowers known in Atlantis, and due partly maybe to greater cruelty and barbarism in the descendants of those people. So you can find it practiced in degenerate ages in both sides of the Atlantic. The Irish druidical rites had the basis for their religion and sun worship. Their chief god was Baal, the same worshipped by the Phoenicians also, the Cain bloodline, the god of the sun. The Irish name for the sun, Grian, which is one of the names of Apollo. Another sun god named Grinius. Sun worship continued in Ireland down to the time of St. Patrick, and some of its customs exist among the peasantry of that country even to this day. St. Patrick's Day, of course, actually the ancient Egyptian sun deity known as Osiris's Day, is celebrated on the 17th day of the third month of the old Egyptian calendar. March 17th, St. Paddy's Day. Among the Peruvians, Romans, other nations, on a certain day, all fires extinguished throughout the kingdom. A new fire kindled in the chief temple by the sun's rays, from which the people were allowed to take the fire, the new fire for the coming year. I've told this story before at Christmas, occasionally. They did it too in Ireland. They had the exact same ritual. A piece of land set apart where the four provinces met. It was in the present-day county of Meath, as a palace called Tlachta. The divine fire was kindled. On the night of what is now known as All Saints' Day, T was Halloween, the Druids' New Year's Day. The Druids assembled at that place to offer their sacrifice, and it was established under heavy penalties that no fire be kindled except from this source. On the 1st of May, you know it as May Day. They're still celebrating it around the world. A convocation of Druids was held in the royal palace of the King of Connaught, and two fires were lit, between which cattle were driven, as a prevention of disease and the blessing of good health. This was called Beltane, or the Day of Baal's Fire. And to this day, the Irish call the first day of May La Beltane, which signifies watchfires, a relic of the ancient sun worship of Atlantis. This practice of driving cattle, too, through the fire continued for a long time. And it's mentioned even in Northamptonshire's folklore that in Northamptonshire in England, a calf sacrificed one of these fires as a blood sacrifice to stop the spread of disease. Fires are still lit in England and Scotland as well as Ireland for superstitious purposes. So the people in Great Britain, and indeed the world, are still in the midst of the ancient sun worship of Atlantis. And I tell you, it's going to reappear. Farther back you go toward the era of Atlantis, the more the Illuminati evidence will multiply and imply that we are approaching the presence of a great, wise, civilized race. For instance, here's an example for you. We're told the Egyptians, Ethiopians, Israelites, from the earliest ages refused to eat the flesh of pigs, swine. The Western nations got away from this rule. And in these modern days, we're beginning to realize the dangers of the articles of food because of the trichinia contained within it. And when you read the Talmud or the Bible, you will find it was forbidden to the Jews because of a small insect which infests it. It's a small, slender nematode, worm that is a parasite of flesh-eating mammals. This is Spaceman of Talk Radio AM 640. I got more, and it's coming to you next.
I've got to call space. This is a View from Space.
That's all it is. It's Talk Radio AM 640, final segment in tonight's show on the Spaceman. The Egyptians, the Ethiopians, the Phoenicians, the Hebrews, and others of ancient races practiced circumcision, too. We're told it was resorted to also in the Atlantean days and imposed as a religious duty to stop one of the most awful scourges of the human race, a scourge which continued to decimate the people of Atlantis, we're told, stunning their growth and paralyzing the civilization. Circumcision stopped some sexual diseases, you see, in Atlantis. One Atlantean king, the great Greek god Uranus, who, in time of plague, compelled his whole army and the armies of his allies to undergo the rite of circumcision. The colonies that went out to Europe carried the practice, but not the disease out of which it originated with them, and it was not until Columbus reopened communication with the infected people of the West Indian Islands that the scourge crossed the Atlantic and turned Europe into a charnel house once again. We're also told life insurance stats show nowadays that because of this practice of circumcision, that our average life expectancy and health are a lot greater, and we owe this to the retention of practices and beliefs imposed 10,000 years ago by the great wise race of the Atlanteans. The Illuminati believed the Atlanteans dwelt on a great island, near which other small islands, probably east and west from them, forming stepping stones toward Europe and Africa in one direction, and the West Indian Islands and America in the other. There were volcanic mountains on the main island, rising to a height of 1,500 feet, with their tops covered with perpetual snow. And below those were elevated tablelands, upon which were the royal establishments. Below these, again, was the great plain of Atlantis. There were four rivers flowing north, south, east, and west from the central point. The climate was like that of the Azores. Mild, pleasant. And the soil, volcanic, fertile, suitable at its different elevations for the growth of the production of the tropical and temperate zones that they were living. The people represented at least a couple of different races. A dark brown, reddish race, akin to the Central Americans, the Berbers, the Egyptians, and even a white race, like the Greeks, the Goths, the Celts, and even the Scandinavians. And various battles, struggles followed between these different people for supremacy. Now, the darker race seems to have been, well, physically a smaller race with small hands. And the lighter color race, much larger. Hence the legends of the Titans and the Giants. The Gonchas of the Canary Islands were men of very great stature, as the myths say. As the works of the Bronze Age represented a small-handed race, and as the races who possessed the ships and gunpowder, well, joined in the war against the giants. And you might conclude that the dark races were the more civilized, that they were the metal workers, the navigators. Now, as the Illuminati control of science reconstructs a new false history of our origin. I'm talking about the history of the migrations of the Aryan race. By the words that exist or fail to appear, the time will soon come when a careful manipulation of words, customs, opinions, arts, archaeological proof will be unveiled for us to see that will point to the lie that the elite, I call the Illuminati, are indeed descended from the Atlantean history. Yes, the people had attained a high position as agriculturists who considered themselves, they had a reputation for being an expert in agriculture and considered themselves protectors of all the earth and animals. A person come to mind? Possibly Prince Charles? Of course. He is the first in line of the British throne. The presidents of the plow in Egypt and Peru implies that they possessed the implement. And as the horns and ox head of Baal show the esteem in which cattle were held among them, you can suppose that they had passed a stage at which the plow was drawn by men, as in Peru and Egypt in ancient times, and in Sweden during the historic period, that it was drawn by oxen or horses, and they first domesticated the horse, hence the association of Poseidon or Neptune, the king of Atlantis, as a sea god with horses. Hence the race courses for horses described by Plato, the sport of kings. Yeah, that now takes on a whole new meaning, doesn't it? They possessed sheep, manufactured woolen goods. They also had goats, dogs, swine. They raised cotton, made cotton goods. They probably cultivated maize, corn, wheat, oats, barley, rye, tobacco, hemp, flax, maybe even potatoes. They built aqueducts, practiced irrigation. They were architects, sculptors, engravers. They possessed an alphabet. They worked in tin, copper, bronze, silver, gold, and iron. During the vast period of their duration as peace and agriculture caused their population to increase to overflowing, they spread out in colonies east and west to the ends of the earth. This is not the work of a few years, but of a lot of centuries. And the relations between these two colonies may have been something like the relation between the different colonies that in a later age were established by the Phoenicians, the Greeks, and the Romans. There was an intermingling with the more ancient races, the earliest inhabitants of those different lands where they settled, and the same crossing of the animal stock, which we know to have been continued all through the historical period. And it must have been going on for thousands of years, whereby new races, new dialects were actually formed. Now, in some ways, these Atlanteans exhibited conditions similar to those of the British Isles. If you examine it, they were the same and even greater. Race differences in the population, the same plantation of colonies in Europe, Asia, and America, the same carrying of civilization to the ends of the earth. It looks like they're both using the same plan. And they are. We've seen colonies from Great Britain going out into the 3rd and 5th centuries to settle on the shores of France, just like the Atlanteans and in Brittany. Just on the coast of France there, represent one of the nationalities and languages of the mother country, a race Atlantean in origin. In the same way, you can suppose Hamitic emigrations have gone out from Atlantis to Syria, Egypt, Barbary states. Now, if you could imagine Highland Scotch, Welsh, Cornish, Irish populations emigrating en masse from England in later times and carrying to their new lands the civilization of England with peculiar languages, not English, we would have to from a slate of things, probably more like the migrations which took place from Atlantis. England, with a civilization, Atlantean in origin, peopled by races from the same source, is repeating in these modern times the empire of Zeus and Kronos, I tell you. And just as we have seen Troy, Egypt, Greece warning against the parent race, so in later days we've seen Brittany and the United States separating themselves from England, the race characteristics remaining after the government connection stops. In religion, the Illuminati believe the Atlanteans had reached all the great thoughts which underlie our modern creeds. They had attained to the conception of one universal, one omnipotent great first cause, one leader. We find the worship of this one in Peru, in early Egypt. They looked upon the sun as the mighty emblem, type, the symbol of the one God. Such a conception could only have come with civilization believing a lie. It's not until these later days that the science has realized the utter dependence of all earthly life on the sun's rays. Driving home the point, the Illuminati are sun worshippers. All applications of animal power can be looked at as derived directly from or indirectly from the static chemical power of the vegetable substance. Where you get your various organisms, their capabilities sustained, and this power in turn from the kinetic action of the sun's rays. Today, the Illuminati are buying up all of the companies that engineer geo-modified seeds so that they can again, as in the past, control all agriculture. Wind and ocean currents, hailstorms, rain, sliding glaciers, flowing rivers, falling cascades are the direct offspring of solar heat. All our machinery, therefore, whether driven by the windmill, the water wheel, horsepower, steam, all the results of electromagnetic changes, telegraphs, clocks, watches, all wound up primarily by the sun. Sun, the greatest source of energy in almost all terrestrial phenomena. Can you see where I'm going with this? That's where this new technology will arise from. Oil. Bye-bye. Thank Atlantis. The sun is the great source of energy in almost all terrestrial phenomena, from the meteorological to the geographical, from the geographical to the geological, to the biological, and the expenditure and conversion of molecular movements taken from the sun's rays. It's all coming to pass. Watch it happen. This has been a View from Space, Talk Radio, AM 640. Coast to Coast is next. I'm Space, and I'm out.